that's the problem.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Monday, November 4th, Grover Beach City Council meeting. So if you would all rise in a moment of silence, please, for those men and women who have paid the ultimate sacrifice in protecting our country. Thank you for that, sir. So now if you would all remain standing as we welcome Mackenzie Alvarez to do our flag salute this evening. So she is 9 years old and is in the fourth grade at Fairgrove Elementary School. Mackenzie tells us that she loves reading and math in school, so great subjects. What she enjoys most about living on the Central Coast is her being able to attend Fairgrove Elementary School, live in her home, and hang out with her friends. In high school and college, she would like to continue studying science and pursue a career as a scientist. I praise for that. In her spare time, Mackenzie enjoys gymnastics, playing with her siblings, especially her sister. And she introduced me to all of her siblings earlier, but I'm not going to try and remember their names. But thank you for being here. So, and she's accompanied by her mother and her dad as well, and her grandmother. So, Mackenzie, if you would please. Nicely done. So I do have a proclamation for you. Thank you very much. So what we're going to do is we're going to face that nice young lady behind us, so or behind you, so, and we're going to stand behind you. Yeah. So we do have some school supplies for you, if you would go ahead and shake it. Thank you so much. Nice job. As a nice, strong leader of our flag salute tonight, so thank you for that. So, very nice. So with that, we will proceed into our roll call. So, City Clerk, please.
Councilmember Bright is absent. Councilmember Lance?
Here.
Councilmember Nichols?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw?
Here.
And Mayor Lee?
I am here as well. So we did get a notification from Councilmember Bright this evening that she is sick and under the weather and won't be able to join us this evening, but we hope to have speedy recovery and have her join us at the next meeting. So with that, though, we will proceed with our quorum, and we will go to our closed session announcements, which we have none this evening, so which then takes us to our agenda review, where we will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests from the council to see if anybody wants to make any changes to the order of the day. So does anyone want to make any changes, or shall we proceed as published?
I move we proceed as published.
I'll second.
Very good. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Very good. We will proceed as published, which takes us into our ceremonial calendar this evening, where we do have a proclamation for National Hospice Palliative Care Month. And I'd like Mayor Pro Tem Shaw to read that proclamation, please.
Yes. This is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring November 2019 as National Hospice and Palliative Care Month. Whereas hospice and palliative care empower people facing a serious or life-limiting illness to live as fully as possible, ensuring people dignity, choice, and quality of life, and whereas the hospice model involves an interdisciplinary, team-oriented approach to treatment, including expert medical care, quality symptom control, and comprehensive pain management as a foundation of care, and whereas beyond providing physical treatment, hospice attends to the patient's emotional, spiritual, and family needs and provides family services like respite care and bereavement counseling, and in an increasingly fragmented and broken healthcare system, hospice is one of the few sectors that demonstrates how healthcare can and should work at its best for its patients. And Whereas a growing body of peer-reviewed research indicates that timely access to hospice and palliative care can decrease hospitalizations and emergency room visits and increase quality of life for patients and family caregivers. And whereas every year more than 1.56 million Americans living with life-limiting illness and their families received care from the nation's hospice program in communities throughout the United States, and more than 355,000 trained volunteers contribute 16 million hours of service to hospice programs annually in the U.S. And whereas Central Coast Hospice, Dignity Health Hospice, Hospice of San Luis Obispo County, and Wilshire Hospice provide hospice care and bereavement counseling, respectively, to individuals within the County of San Luis Obispo, and whereas hospice and palliative care organizations are advocates and educators about advanced care planning that help individuals make decisions about the care that they want. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby proclaim November 2019 as National Hospice and Palliative Care Month and encourages citizens to increase their understanding and awareness of care at the end of life and to observe this month with appropriate activities and programs.
Very good, and thank you for that. And I understand that Marat Akelin, a board member of Hospice Slow, is here to receive the proclamation. Unfortunately, they weren't able to join us this evening, so we will make sure that we get that to them and say thank you and congratulations to them. So, thank you. Thank you. So that does take us to public communications, where during this time the council will receive. Where any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on an item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. However, the council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, we cannot act on items not on the agenda. So it looks like I have three speakers this evening. So we'll first start with Liz Dukas.
Good evening. Today, City Manager Bronson was presented with the Public Records Act request regarding all legal costs of the city going back many years. I have requested an investigation into the actions and non-actions of our legal representatives. As you all well know, I continue to get enforcement of an illegally modified use. One of my first experiences with Grover Beach Code Enforcement was around 20 years ago when my neighbors asked for help with very large commercial vehicles offloading equipment utilizing a forklift. Crossing 4th Street to a business located across the street, resulting in a huge nuisance for your citizens, blocking their street, emitting diesel exhaust and the terrible noise disturbance. I knew it was illegal from past experience. When I asked the officers to cite this commercial vehicle, they said it was allowed. I asked them to show me where in the municipal code it was allowed. They didn't know. They just were told. The next time this happened, I pointed out the code section where commercial vehicles can only offload from a residential area if there is a contiguous sidewalk with that business. Well, city officials certainly didn't like my citing of the codes then, and they certainly don't like it now. Mr. Hill replied upon question from Council Members Shaw and Bright, and after I was removed from the council chambers at one of the last meetings, that, oh, they've gone over the structure and determined that it was okay to have this use. That statement is patently false, misleading, against the issued notices of violations, and without any actual legal due diligence presented for making this determination, all in contravention to our established building code compliance laws and regulations for health and safety. If you believe this attorney that cutting a house in half is just okay without any legal substantiation, I then must question every decision this council makes if it is not based in law and from an off-the-cuff, unintelligible remark with potential secondary gain. This structure was illegally modified decades ago into separate apartments with an illegal kitchen. This type of zoning change requires application of permits, filings of plans and fees, building official oversight, and an occupancy permit after compliance. None of this was ever perfected. The very nature of this building into two units has affected both properties adversely and in which no tenant has been able to live in any longer than 6 to 8 months as this house is split in two. Would you like your children to go outside the actual structure of their home, their bedrooms, to go to the kitchen via an outside staircase? It just is simply ludicrous. What is required is returning the structure back to its original use. Then the legal and lawful permits can be obtained, plan submitted, project reviewed for compliance, building inspection oversight, and then final occupancy permit for a multiple unit configuration, which this clearly is. This is what must and should, as required by law, needs to be accomplished. Thank you for your time.
Next up is Ron Arnoldson, followed by Jocelyn Brennan, please.
Good evening. I'm here to speak on what I call the Newport debacle. At the initial meeting of the residents of Newport, I thought there was consensus that the residents didn't really want to have medians, parkways, or bulb outs. Doesn't sound like the city leaders have really listened to us. They kind of have the attitude that this is a professional, we're the professionals, don't do this at home, you might get hurt. The city uses the argument of pavement management because the street is so wide. It's not that much wider than the two streets above it, Saratoga or Atlantic City. And the concrete bulb outs are much more expensive than any pavement management that is proposed. I've lived there for 25 years, and I've never seen pavement management in 25 years. So I don't know what that even means, other than filling a pothole here and there. For the last 10 years, driving up Newport's been, in my instance, kind of like a snake under the influence of alcohol, trying to avoid every ditch, pothole, whatever you have. So here we have the bulb outs. What are they really for? The cost of the city is 3 or 4 times more than concrete. They narrow the intersects to a bottleneck, so that make it difficult for any large trucks, such as a UPS truck or parcel truck or whatever, trying to make the turn, motorhomes, any vehicle with a towing a trailer or a boat. They create a dangerous bottlenecks for bicyclists, because that's where the bicyclists are funneled to now. Make it difficult for two vehicles to pass at the same time when they meet each other at that intersection. There's only one block on Newport that has sidewalk on both sides of the street. That's the block from 7th to 8th. That's the block I live on. Every other block from 1st Street to Oak Park has open sidewalks or open areas where there should be sidewalks on one side or the other of the street. Don't you think with all the bulb outs that we're putting in there and the wheelchair accessibility that we would have completed the sidewalks before we did any of these stupid bulb outs? The wheelchairs have this access, but then they're a wheelchair to nowhere. As a matter of fact, if you look at Mrs. Shaw's house, the two properties east of hers have dirt and vegetation where there should be sidewalk. What do you do when you're riding a wheel? Wheelchair there? Go four-wheel driving? No, you probably got to go back and down somebody's driveway. Anyway, this whole thing is a debacle, and in the words of the government, there's just two ways to define it. One's FUBAR, the other one is clusterfuck.
And we're going to try and keep our language to a... thank you, Mr. Arnoldson. Next up, we have Jocelyn Brennan, followed by Casey Gilway.
Mayor and council members, I just wanted to make two quick announcements. One is that we are currently accepting nominations for Grover Beach Citizen of the Year. So council, staff, residents, anyone watching online, you can nominate someone who has served the Grover Beach community. They do not need to necessarily live in Grover Beach, but they need to have served the Grover Beach community. Or a person who has served the community at large that lives in Grover Beach. For Grover Beach Citizen of the Year for 2019, they'll be honored at our annual dinner on January 22nd, and it's a great way to recognize someone who has contributed to the community. And they can find the nominations on southcountychambers.com under resources. There's a link to nominate someone. The nominations are confidential unless the person you nominate is going to be recognized, and then, of course, they're told in advance so they can invite their friends and family. And lastly, I would just like to say thank you for your partnership on Leadership South County and congratulate Kathy Petker on being an alumni of Class 1. That's it.
Very good. And quick question for you, Jocelyn. So are applications for Class 2 still open, or have they
closed? They are now closed.
They are now closed. Yes. Great. Then we'll look forward to seeing who successfully becomes a member of Class 2.
Right.
Very good. Thank you. My last speaker slip this evening for public comment is Casey Gilway. So if there is anyone who wants to speak on public comments, either fill out your slips or be prepared to speak after Mr. Gilway.
Hi, City Council. My name is Casey Gilway. I wanted to speak about California Assembly Bill 1482, the rental cap limit. So that was signed in October 16th, I believe, of 2019, and will be coming into law January 1st. On October 20th, my landlord called me and evicted me. So because of the AB 1482, he clearly stated that he would be making less money, and because of this cap, he wanted to evict me. So by December 20th, I'm going to have to leave Grover Beach. I've been here in the same place for the last 10 years. My landlord and I do have a good relationship. However, because of this, he evicted me. Is there any way that an eviction freeze could be put into place that would be effective from January 1st to when the bill was signed October 16th? Other cities have done this and put this into place. Please look into this for people such as myself in this current situation. Thank you very much.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else who wants to speak under public communications this evening? Please come forward.
Good evening, council members. I am also here to speak about some of the implications of Senate Bill 1482. We've been receiving notices across the county of an increase in evictions, increases in rent beyond what can be reasonably sustained by most tenants. As a result of this bill, it's a loophole that has kind of allowed landlords and corporate apartments to try and nudge as many tenants out as they can in order to increase the rent before 1482 goes into effect in January. And I am asking our city council to enact an eviction moratorium and a rent freeze for the period before the law goes into effect. Unfortunately, there are bad actors who will try and gouge as much out of their tenants as they can, even if they have a good relationship with them. Los Angeles, Bell Gardens, Inglewood, several other cities across the state have already enacted or are getting ready to enact things like this. And I think since Grover is a majority tenant city, that it's something that our council should seriously consider to protect our own constituents. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else who wants to speak under public comment this evening? Seeing no one else come forward, we'll go ahead and close that and bring it back to the council. And maybe just a quick question for the city attorney with regards to AB 1482, and if there is any provisions that you're aware of to see, A, if we can do that. It sounds like that we do have that opportunity, and then perhaps a quick poll of the council to see if we want to have a discussion on that at a future agenda. So first, city attorney.
Yes, that is correct. SB 1482. Does come effect January 1st. There is a question in the legal community at the moment as to whether, although it does become effective January 1st, 2020, there are provisions of that particular bill that require justification by the landlord to evict somebody. there's a difference of view as to whether that actually doesn't take effect until January 1st or whether that is effective immediately. That is not something I've researched and looked at the moment, nor have I looked at whether there's a moratorium or some kind of freeze that an agency can put into place. I'd have to do a little bit of research and get back to you and let you know, but I can do that fairly quickly.
So is there a potential consensus by the council to have the city attorney look into that and provide an update at our November 18th meeting? So
yes.
City manager. So you look like you had You were going to say something?
Just to add to that, I am aware of some communities that have looked into this and considered an urgency ordinance that would go into effect immediately with a supermajority of the council as a possibility. So if the council wished to provide direction to us to research it, we could bring something back to you at a future council meeting if that was the wish of the council.
Yeah, I would like to, because I wouldn't just want the research without possibly being able to do something. So I would like to see both as soon as possible, I think.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yes, that sounds fine to me to be able to look into it more.
Sounds like there's consensus there. I guess the question that I have is, obviously, November 18th is a is 45 days plus or minus from January 1st. Is there any action, depending upon what we find, that is going to be implementable soon enough to put before the bill goes into effect?
Well, certainly we can bring back, if it's your direction, to do the analysis, and if the city manager and I ultimately come to a conclusion that you do have that ability, we can bring that, put it on the agenda, and have that moratorium or whatever vehicle it takes on your agenda, next agenda. Or you have the ability, if you so choose, to call a special meeting. So those are two ways within which we can deal with the issue. And on moratoriums, I'd have to look, but I'm not clear that it takes a 30-day effective period for a moratorium. And if it doesn't, you can do it immediately. Certainly an urgency ordinance typically is implemented in that context as an immediate effectiveness. Then, yes, I think the answer to your question is we could.
So is there a consensus by the council to add that direction to say research and, if possible, bring back emergency action?
Yes.
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 Okay. Very good. So we will look forward to an update on that on the 18th, and pending what your research finds, an agenda item on the November 18th meeting. Very good. So that does take us to our consent agenda this evening, where these are routine items that are scheduled for consideration as a group. Is there any member of the council that wants to pull an item for either question, discussion, or separate consideration? Okay.
I'll make a motion.
Actually, I do have a speaker slip, but I would like to pull item number three, which is a professional services agreement for the Senior Center feasibility study. Just had a quick question or two for the city manager. So is there any other questions that people have on consent? If not, I will go ahead and open this up to public comment on consent items. And I do have one speaker slip, that is Ron Arnoldson.
My concern is on item number five, not generally the item itself, but I think that any time that this body puts a contract out, there should be some performance clauses in it. If you'll notice, Newport has been under construction for probably 6 months. They've completed six of 14 blocks completely. There's an average of five guys working on that street a day. Should be probably five times that. As a resident of that street, it's been disrupted for six months. I think that's just ridiculous. I think that you need to have some performance clauses that stipulate when the thing should be finished. If they finish prior to that, give them a bonus. If they don't, then they should be charged so much for every day, every week, whatever they miss the deadline. But I would urge you to start putting performance clauses in all of these contracts. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else who wants to speak on an item that is on the consent agenda this evening? Seeing no one come forward, we will go ahead and close that and bring it back to the council for consideration. So I think my questions are substantial enough to where I'd like to take item number three under a separate action. So perhaps before we go to this, city manager, if you would, Mr. Arnoldson's question with regards to item number five and performance clauses within our contracts for K-14 streets and other improvements within the city.
I would say generally that we do work closely with the contractors. We have a construction manager who is on site working with the contractor and making sure that they follow the procedures and work tasks associated with the project. We have a start date, we have an end date, and Newport is on track, on schedule to complete in the January time frame. It's a project that is iterative, so there's not a single completion of one block to the other. There are different segments that go on the entire length of the street as it continues, in this case, from east to west. So overall, the project is on task, on schedule, and we make sure that this is carried out for each of our street projects going forward.
Great. I appreciate that update. Let me ask a slightly different question. In the contracts themselves, knowing contracts in a different part of my life, there's typically a series of dates or a date-specific number of working days that are generally included within contracts. And if the contract is not completed by that, there's an opportunity for the city to apply liquidated damages. So I think I've seen that in our contracts from a city's perspective, but I just wanted to confirm with you that maybe I see Mr. Ray coming forward. Perhaps he can respond with regards to working days and liquidated damages.
I will defer to Mr. Ray.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. Your question was about whether or not the city has working days associated and liquidated damages. Every city contract that I've let in the last going on 11 years now has had time of completion, liquidated damages associated, $1,000 a day, and bonds to recover any amount that is not completed. So,
thank you for that. And I am disappointed in Mr. Arnoldson for having left before hearing that answer, because that was the question that he was asking, and I think it's incumbent upon city staff to have provided that answer, and unfortunately he was not here to actually hear that. So hopefully he will watch this meeting in the replay and be able to get that information. So thank you, Mr. Ray, for that information. So with absent item number 3, is there any member of the council that wants to make a motion on the consent calendar?
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent calendar as written, except for item 3.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Looks like this is a roll call vote, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Yes.
Councilmember Lance.
Yes.
Councilmember Bright is absent. Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes. So very good. So we do have another contract being let for Measure K-14 street improvements. So we are continuing that process and continuing to move forward with street improvements in accordance with the wishes of the community, which is great.
Could I make a comment on the consent? Yeah, mm-hmm. I didn't have any questions, but I do, you know, even though it's on consent, want to commend our staff and just everyone and how much is actually getting done here. We're, you know, moving possibly forward to the senior center. We're working on the second round of water lines. You know, we're already working on over $1 million worth. We're trying to get even more than that. We're on to yet another set of K-14 streets. This project was supposed to take 20 years. We're at 4 to 5 years in it. We're at 45% completion, soon to be 50. So there's a lot going on here that our staff should really be commended for, and a lot of positive things going on in Grover Beach.
Definitely agree in the fact that we're doing a lot with the approval of this consent calendar this evening. We're applying for over $160,000 in SB2 grants, which is going to provide some hopefully some avenues for affordable housing to come forward, and also planning incentives throughout the city as well. And then additional CDBG community development block grants for additional water lines. So yes, so it's consent is typically routine items, but tonight's are routine items that are going to continue to help us reshape and make improvements to our infrastructure to the city. So with that, I would like to go back to item number 3, if you don't mind, with regards to the professional services agreement for the senior center feasibility study. And I did ask some questions of the city manager earlier today, and he was kind enough to have himself and Mr. Buckingham provide some feedback. And one of the things that I just wanted to ask was the Green Play Senior Center Feasibility Study. I wanted to kind of just have a conversation with council, because my understanding and my thought was the five cities has a senior center in Oceano. We do provide, as a region, we do provide some senior center opportunities. But I want to make sure that we're not displacing that specifically, that we're augmenting those services. And I wanted to make sure that that was included within the within this feasibility study, because we obviously need more services in there. Obviously, this is Grover-centric, but we do want to. I do want to kind of hope that that we will take a look at it from a regional standpoint as well. So, not really a question, but wanted to give staff an opportunity to address the concern that I expressed earlier today, and see how that's in the RFP.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. Bruce Buckingham, your community development director. First of all, I would just start by saying this is a feasibility study. It is simply to look at, yes, from a regional standpoint, what are the services that are being provided today, what program gaps might there be, and really a collaboration with what are all the services that are taking place in the five cities area. It really will just become an informational document to the council when you ultimately hear the presentation from the consultant, and it'll give the council an idea of potential cost of constructing or using an existing building to rehab it, your operational costs for ongoing maintenance and operation. So it's really intended to provide an overview of what could be, but ultimately the council can then decide, and cost could be a large factor in that as to whether it's even feasible to move forward with this, or the services being provided are perfectly adequate and there's really no reason to pursue a senior center in the city of Grover Beach. So a very broad overview of information that will ultimately be provided to the council.
Okay. Very good. And second question for you was the, I just want to make sure there's an understanding by the council that let's say that we were to implement either a center or an augmentation of services within Grover Beach, that there is some expectation by these grant funds that it would be an in-house or a contract basis with either a nonprofit or some other organization. So there is some requirements on behalf of the city, depending upon where this moves forward. Did I say that correctly, or is there a better way for you to explain that?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay, so I just want to make sure there's an acknowledgement on our part that, depending upon where the study goes, it may impact the services or the service levels of staffing at the city.
You mean if we decide to move forward with a potential senior facility or the like, we would then be required to contract with certain people potentially?
Or have staff in-house to do that.
Right? Yeah, it'd be a case where the city would provide it. It could be done operationally by a third-party nonprofit provider, but yes, if we applied for a facility and constructed one, the city would be responsible for the overall provision of that facility.
Could I ask, I just had a quick question about outreach, because it did say in the study there would be outreach to seniors, and I was just wondering, because I know a lot of the seniors do gather in Oceano. I think a lot also gather at the Women's Center or the Women's Club in AG sometimes too. So, and those include people from Grover Beach as well as people from the area. So will that be part of the outreach, talking to them? Like, what do you like about what you have now and what do you not like?
Correct. By all means, they will try to discover or unearth every service that's going on in the five cities, reach out and talk to them. And again, that'll be the body of information that will come back to the council so you can understand. And they'll also look at demographics to see if our population is changing, will that increase demand in the future?
Thank you.
Very good. And with that, I'll recognize Lonnie Kurtzel in the back, who is the general manager of the Oceano Senior Day Center. So I'm hoping that she would be part of the outreach as well, because I had an opportunity to meet with her along with Mayor Pro Tem Shaw several months ago, and wanted to make sure that we're providing the best senior services in the region and not trying to supplant any services that are currently ongoing. So any other questions of staff? Very good. Thank you. So I'll see if one last opportunity, if there's anyone that wants to speak on this item before we bring it back for consideration. Seeing no one come forward, is someone prepared to make a motion on the professional services agreement for a senior center feasibility study?
I'll make a motion that we adopt the resolution authorizing the city to enter into professional services agreement with Greenplay LLC.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? This looks like a roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw?
Yes.
Councilmember Lance?
Yes.
Councilmember Bright is absent. Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Mayor Lee?
Yes. So very good. So we'll look forward to the public outreach, the community surveys, or the community discussion, and then coming back with that in early 2020. Very good. So that takes us to item number 7, which is our, if I'm reading it correctly, our public hearing this evening, which is an introduction and first reading of an ordinance to amend the Municipal Code, Article 8 of the Building Regulations, Chapter 1, to adopt by reference the 2019 California Building Codes and 2018 International Property Maintenance Code with local amendments. Mr. Brunson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I'll just say briefly that Mr. Buckingham and Chief Lieberman are here this evening to present this item, which is the update of the state building and fire codes, and then some revisions to our local amendments in a few key areas. And so I'd like to thank the two gentlemen for their work on this item, bringing this forward this evening, and I will turn it over to them.
Very good. Mr. Buckingham, Chief Lieberman, welcome.
Good evening, Mayor, members of our council. So just a background quickly, the state mandates that the building codes be updated every 3 years in all cities throughout the state. The new 2019 codes will take effect on January 1st, 2020. The city adopts these codes by ordinance in our Article 8 of the Municipal Code. So there are actually 12 codes that make up the building code. Those are everything from the building code itself, fire, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, green code. There are 12 codes in total. So, and again, in addition to those codes, the building codes, the council has historically also adopted the International Property Maintenance Code, and that happens to be the 2018 version that we're asking you to adopt tonight. And that is beneficial, addressing code enforcement issues related to property management. So the state does allow cities to make local amendments that are more restrictive based on local geographic, topographic, or climatic conditions. The state code does require that if you're going to adopt those local amendments, that you adopt specific findings which are part of a separate resolution. So the state codes, the local amendments, I should say, that we've typically made, I'll say historically made here, really only affect two items, and that's fire sprinklers and common access driveways. So on those two local amendments, staff is proposing the following modifications. The first is to clarify the threshold for the requirement to install fire sprinklers for remodels. Not additions, but just remodels where you go in and want to alter the inside or exterior of your home. Currently, that threshold of altering that triggers the fire sprinklers is 50% of the residents. Well, 50% of what? It's been a little bit ambiguous and difficult for the public to understand when they are designing their project whether that applies. So staff is proposing to quantify the 50% threshold by providing a precise calculation, which is basically if you're going to remove more than 50% of the perimeter walls and or 50% of your roof framing, that would be the threshold. And really that would only apply to real significant remodels. And we do see a handful of these a year, but this is, again, in order to help the public clearly understand what the thresholds would be. Next, regarding fire sprinklers, is the local amendment to eliminate the threshold for new residential construction. And the reality is, this is in the 2019 code and previous residential codes. Sprinklers are required regardless of size. So this is really just a cleanup item related to the residential code. But in addition to that, staff's recommending the elimination of the minimum threshold of this 1,000 square feet for new commercial industrial buildings. Currently, again, that threshold is 1,000 feet triggers the requirements for sprinklers in new construction. But in looking back, maybe 10 years, we can only find one new building that's less than 1,000 square feet, because if you're going to build a new commercial or industrial building today, those happen to be significantly larger than 1,000 square feet. So although it's a minor change, and we really don't think that it's going to have any impact on new construction costs. So state law also has eliminated the requirement to install fire sprinklers in accessory dwelling units, or commonly known as ADUs, if the primary residence does not have fire sprinklers. So that's something that's happened through the state legislature in order to promote the construction of accessory dwelling units. However, the code indicates that you can require fire sprinklers if you don't meet the access requirements. And currently, if you don't have an 18-foot wide driveway, then you don't meet this access requirement. So we're, again, seeing a lot more ADUs in part because of the state encouraging these. And staff is recommending that in lieu of actually installing that fire sprinkler, when, again, you have an access way of less than 18 feet, that it would be an option that they could install a horizontal dry pipe. And basically that means that there'd be some kind of standpipe near the back of the sidewalk that would allow the fire department to have an easy connection. And this pipe would run to the rear where it would have another standpipe. And they would then be able to take a hose to the rear yard and connect to that standpipe. So this line doesn't ever have water in it unless the fire department shows up. So we really think that this is potentially less expensive than installing fire sprinklers while still providing the life safety measurements. And I would add that while we're talking about access, the reality of what we're starting to see is that if you have a home that has standard width, you have probably a 5-yard side setback. And so that 5 feet, while the fire department hopes that it's unobstructed when they get there, it may have obstructions. And they won't know that until they arrive there. So this is another tool that could allow easy connection, getting through the side yard, and then being able to provide fire suppression to the unit in the rear. And lastly, just some other minor changes. We did add an exception to clarify the common access driveway width of 18 feet. In reality, it's past practice, and it is also codified in our development code that that is the minimum width. Another thing we did was we added a section reducing the permit time frame to 90 days for active code enforcement cases. Technically, the code gives you 6 months from the time you permit issued till you have a first inspection. And then once you have an inspection, it continues it for another 6 months. We have these active code enforcement cases where there's been illegal construction done, and we want to get them to come into conformance as soon as possible. So this is simply just another tool to reinforce a limited time frame so that they will diligently pursue the building changes in order to come into compliance. And lastly, there were several other minor revisions that you might have noted in general cleanup. So with that, staff is recommending that the council introduce the ordinance tonight, amending the municipal code to adopt the 2019 building code, the 2018 international property maintenance code with the local amendments. We're also asking you to adopt a resolution, making those local findings for the local amendments. We would ask, actually, that you just delay this until the second reading and adoption. And then finally, to schedule the second reading for the next meeting on November 18th. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation. Chief, is there anything that you wanted to add to Mr. Buckingham's discussion?
Slide down. Thank you. It's a rather intimate presentation. Sir, I think you did a great job. I'm just available to answer any questions you may have.
Very good. Thank you for that. Is there any questions of staff? To my right, Councilmember Lance.
Yes. Mainly probably because I just did a remodel, so all this is very fresh in my mind. When I was reading the actual ordinance and changes, when it's 50% of exterior walls, are we talking down to studs? Or are we talking siding? That can also be open to interpretation as well, I feel like.
We would consider removal, meaning that the entire wall is removed.
Okay. And then my other question was mainly just a clarification on the dry pipe. So my understanding is that from a state level perspective, they're removing the requirement for sprinklers for all ADUs. And so this is us being more restrictive in requiring the dry pipe. Is my understanding correct?
Well, again, the state fire marshal, part of the state, has weighed in on this, and they've indicated that the city can't require fire sprinklers just because it's an ADU. But if you don't meet access or other code requirements, then you can require fire sprinklers. So in some ways, what would happen is if you had this less than 18 feet, we would require fire sprinklers. So we consider this a reduced cost or another
option.
Based on
what our current ordinance is?
Yes, by allowing
this. But not necessarily what the state has put forward with their building code.
And again, the council could be less restrictive if you chose. And we've contacted several other cities. They run the gamut. Some are hard and fast. We're still going to require fire sprinklers if we don't meet the access.
Right.
Others have not.
Logistically, dry pipe is all new to me. So when we're talking about less restrictive, and this may be getting into the weeds a little bit, but in my head, running a pipe from one part of the property to another, having to go under potentially concrete and all kinds of other things that happen between the property and where you would have the exit of the pipe, would potentially be more cost, not as cost effective as putting in sprinklers. Is my understanding correct is that the dry pipe would go from potentially around the ADU to the front of the property?
Yes.
Okay. Right, so if I think about my property, I have concrete all up and down, so I would have to rip all that concrete up, run a pipe to have it exit the front of my property, correct? Potentially.
So it would vary from site to site.
Yeah, of course.
But this is an option. If you install the fire sprinklers, you would
so
have,
you would have the option.
You
still.
Do have the option, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Nichols.
I do have one question due to an article I recently read about a woman who had installed a dry pipe, as I understand it, by the eaves of her house, along the side of her house, and put a fire qualified hose in there to make it accessible to the fire department for the ADU in the back. Now, is that a permissible approach? They're making her tear it down.
So, in this case, if the council were to adopt the ordinance as drafted, we would actually create a city standard similar to the example that we showed you. So there would be no confusion. The homeowner would have two options. They would assess the cost of fire sprinklers versus this dry standpipe if they didn't meet that minimum access. I would add that what we've seen fairly common is that while someone at first says, I want to install fire sprinklers, it's $3 a square foot, and it's a 1,000 square foot unit. So it's $3,000. Then they come to the city, and we say, oh, well, by the way, you need to upgrade your water meter to a 1-inch meter, and you have to trench out into the middle of the street in order to upsize that lateral to 1 inch. So all of a sudden now it's gone from $3,000 to put the fire sprinklers in the building to an additional $3,000. So now you've doubled the cost because you've had to go out into the street to connect to this water main. So that's a hidden cost that we have seen come up. So that's, again, why this option could be less expensive in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions to my right?
I can wait until we go all the way through unless.
Okay. Over to my left.
I just had a couple just on the definition of 50% with the roof framing. So that would mean that you're actually changing the structure. For example, I would think when people want to remodel, they'd probably put in just a new roof, but that wouldn't count.
Correct. This is not just removing and replacing the roofing material. This would be, you'd actually be removing the trusses, the physical structure that supports
the roof. Changing the structure.
Correct.
Okay. And could you just explain one more time, so dry pipe, so is it, it's not buried, it's above the ground, it's...
Good evening, Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief. So the premise with the dry pipe is that it is truly just that. It's some buried pipe that have laterals at each end. So in theory, what would happen, should there be a fire in the rear of the structure at an ADU, fire department would show up. They would connect to the dry pipe connection at the street. Firefighters, rather than trying to make their way back, potentially through a five-foot setback with a lot of stuff in there, dragging hose that gets hung up, they would just carry stacks of hose back there to the rear of the residence, connect to the dry pipe, which would have a valve, and then they would start firefighting operations at that point.
Okay.
So it's just a static structure until it's used.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Nope, that's it.
Going back to Councilmember Lance.
Yes. And now I forgot my question, to be honest. So,
let me ask a couple questions,
please.
And we'll see if that jogs your memory. So, Mr. Buckingham, if you would go back to the slide that has that one. So where fire sprinklers can be required, can still be required if minimum access, the other one above that. Staff, state law eliminated requirement to install fire sprinklers in the ADU if the primary residence does not have sprinklers. So if the primary residence has sprinklers, does that trigger sprinklers in the ADU?
Yes.
Okay, so it's either neither structure has sprinklers or all structures have sprinklers.
Correct.
Okay. So in the discussion that we've been having about affordable housing and so forth, where we have structures under 1,000 square feet, so state law now requires those to also have fire sprinklers. So the second question to that becomes, if we had just a tiny home or an ADU, can't have an ADU on a structure that does on a property that doesn't have a primary residence. But let's say we had someone that wanted to put in just a less than 1,000 square foot residence, double wide trailer. So that would require fire sprinklers under the current ordinance?
The California Residential Code, again, for many years now requires fire sprinklers no matter what size. So not the ADU, but the primary residence, if you were going to construct that tomorrow in the city, would require fire sprinklers.
Okay. So anything from 0 square feet and up.
Correct.
That's new would require fire sprinklers.
Correct.
Okay. Very good. And I kind of asked this question. It's more of a philosophical question, so I'll understand if you philosophically answer it. One of the things we've been trying to do as a city is to encourage investment and encourage people to build new housing stock. So is there anything in the code here that we can modify, eliminate, do be less stringent in order to continue to encourage that investment? Or is this code amendments as permissible as possible to provide for that investment?
So simply stated, the state does not allow you to make the code less restrictive. So from that respect, the local amendments are the actual ability of the jurisdiction to be more restrictive. So
basically the code is going to require what the code is, whether it's amenable to development or not. So whether the code is not there to incentivize development. The code is there to fire life safety and adherence to appropriate building codes. So, I mean, I guess it is still a philosophical thought out there that codes and development sometimes don't make for good bedfellows.
That's correct, but here's an example where the state has come in and eliminated the requirement for fire sprinklers and ADU for ADUs if, again, you can meet all the local code requirements. We're talking about this hypothetical or the situation where you don't have that 18-foot access, but there are cases where they do have the 18-foot access and they would no longer be required to have fire sprinklers. So the state did become less restrictive in that manner.
Okay. Thank you. Did that trigger your memory?
Yes, it did. So the dry pipe is actually us being more restrictive than the state building code, and therefore that's an opportunity. I know that Chief Riverman's going to cringe, but I'm just wondering, I mean, do we need that?
So semantics.
I know.
It
who knew I'd be talking about a dry pipe this long?
We would say that actually by allowing the standpipe in lieu of the fire sprinklers, that's less restrictive because in theory, if you didn't meet the 18-foot access today, you'd be required to put in fire sprinklers.
Okay, so...
But again, this whole thing about a dry pipe is only when you can't meet this minimum access requirement.
I know, but the state legislation is that you don't need fire sprinklers in accessory dwelling units if the primary residence doesn't have them. So are we saying that a primary residence that has sprinklers, an ADU would not... Okay. So in a new ADU where the primary residence, I'm going to use my house for example. I do not have fire sprinklers. My house was built in 1960. If I wanted to put an ADU in, I do not have the 18 feet access. I have your standard 5 feet on each side to the backyard. In that instance, based on state legislation, I would not have to put fire sprinklers in my ADU. But if we add this dry pipe ordinance, then I would have to add a dry pipe. Does that make sense? So it would be potentially more restrictive in that situation. And I'm not planning on putting an ADU in my backyard. This has nothing to do with my personal ambition for my property. I just, that's what my question, where my question lies.
I would say, first of all, we're relying on the state fire marshal put out a memo.
Mm-hmm.
So another part of the state, you will, another state agency. They indicated that their policy is, yes, ADUs don't require fire sprinklers, in your example. Oh, but wait a minute. We have to look at other fire codes as well, not just the fact that it's an ADU. And so they look to this minimum access. And if they say if it doesn't meet your local jurisdiction's minimum access, in our case 18 feet, then you can require fire sprinklers. Or I say you shall require fire sprinklers.
Okay, difference. Okay.
Yes.
Shall. Got it. Okay. That.
And we're saying, well, that could be burdensome depending on the situation. Here's another alternative that we're proposing that you could do in lieu of the fire sprinklers.
But there's a shall in there.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. That clarifies things for me.
Okay, very good. So I'm going to ask one more question and see if I can get these two gentlemen to cringe some more. So with going back to the dry pipe discussion, exactly. So it's a great opportunity for us to focus on one thing and not the rest of the code updates. So if there was a minimum distance, so let's say that from an operational standpoint, the accessory dwelling was more than 100 feet from the property line, so the street property line, then that was a requirement to provide the standpipe. So otherwise, the fire up from an operational standpoint would fire... staff or firefighters basically fight the fire from the street, but if there was a standpipe 100 feet in to the accessory dwelling unit, does that provide any different operational concerns for firefighter staff?
Please correct me if I don't answer a portion of your question. I believe I heard it appropriately. So let me just go back to the dreaded state fire marshal memo that Mr. Buckingham is referring to. The section where the state fire marshal is weighing in on shalls has to do with access, water flow, and life safety issues. So those are still confounding conditions of the fire sprinkler requirement. I will answer your question about standpipes in a moment, but I do want to go back to your hypothetical philosophical question about streamlining the development review and encouraging investment in the community. The whole intent of the fire authority was to find an option that we believe could be more cost-effective than installing fire sprinklers and the associated infrastructure in the public right-of-way. That was our driving force with coming up with the standpipe, knowing that other cities in this county also offer that as an option in different situations. Operationally, the standpipe is just, it's an extension of, you could really think of it as a fire hose, or you could think of it as the city water system. We're going to connect to it from a fire engine with a water supply. We're going to boost it to the appropriate pressure. We're going to push it to the rear of the yard. What it does really is it saves time. Again, going back to that 5-foot setback, there could be stuff. I have stuff in my 5-foot setback at my personal home. Trying to navigate that with hose, flexible hose, versus putting hose packs on the shoulder of a firefighter and walking straight back there, connecting it, and going to work is a efficiency of time.
I think that's all my dry standpipe questions. Anybody else have any others? My only other non-fire-related question is for Mr. Buckingham, and the fact that we are going to be approving or conducting implementing as of July 1st the remainder of the codes, electrical, mechanical, plumbing, and so forth. Are there any major changes to the code in this cycle that you can update or that you can provide updates for? And if you say no, I'll get back to you at the next meeting. I'm fine with that as well, because I didn't give you a whole lot of preparation for this. I'm just wondering if there, in 2010, the structural code was overhauled. So is there any overhaul in these year's codes that the development community really needs to be aware of?
3 years ago, I found a nice summary on a website, and I provided that to you. And this time I had to take it out because I could not find it. We do have some nice code books that talk about all the changes from the 2016 to the 2019 code. I think in general, though, the changes for residential are not significant. If there's any changes, you're going to see those in energy codes, green code related. And I would say the same about industrial and commercial buildings. You're really, again, continuing to see the state increase energy efficiency, and that's where we've seen the major code changes over the last couple of years.
Okay, great. Very good. Thank you for that information. Thank you for that discussion. So those questions, this is a public hearing, so we'll go ahead and open this up and see if there's any members of the public that want to speak on this item. If so, please come forward and state your name. No one wants to ask questions about dry standpipes? Okay. Come on forward. I knew I'd get a taker. Thank you, Catherine.
Oh, I'm Catherine Sells. I live on Mentone in Grover. My question is, can this pipe be above ground, or does it have to be underground?
Very good. So, any other questions or comments on this item? I will go ahead and close this and bring it back and see if which gentleman wants to respond to that question.
Not being a civil engineer, but being the son of a civil engineer, I would say that above-ground installation of the dry pipe would probably not be functional due to the rapid changes in water pressure once it's in use, and I believe it being subterranean would be much more effective and safe.
Okay. Very good. So, okay, let's bring it back. Any other discussion on this item, or what's the pleasure of the council for this introduction and first reading of the ordinance?
I don't have any questions. I think we had a thorough presentation and Q&A. So,
I think the modifications make sense. I'd be willing to make a motion if other people don't have discussion. Okay, I'd like to make a motion that we introduce the ordinance to amend Grover Beach Municipal Code, Article 8, Building Regulations, Chapter 1, to adopt the 2019 California Building Codes and the 2018 International Property Maintenance Code with local amendments, adopt a resolution setting forth the...
We're going to hold that.
We'll hold that. Yep. All right.
And then the third... second.
And then the third... let's see. Okay, and schedule the second reading and adoption at the next regularly scheduled City Council meeting.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. So is this a roll call? Mm-hmm. Then roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Bright is absent. Councilmember Lance.
Yes.
And Mayor Lee.
Yes, as well, with the caveat that thank you to staff for responding to our questions and having that discussion. I think there's always a consternation sometimes when the state enacts codes and so forth upon us that we want to try and have more flexibility with, but I think you've done a good job of bringing forward and making sure that these codes become enforceable by during our development review process, and we'll look forward to the second reading at the next meeting. Very good. Thank you, gentlemen. So that does take us to, everybody okay on that? So this takes us to our next item, which is a discussion of economic development activities within Grover Beach. So, City Manager Bronson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I am pleased to bring forward tonight an item on economic development activities for the council consideration. This is being brought to you as a study session-like item, so there is no action being requested of the council. I'm bringing some information on what we have done in economic development, what's in our current strategy from 2017, and most importantly, what we could do going forward using some new one-time funding from a recently enacted state law that helps provide some opportunities for us, $220,000 of one-time funding to support economic development in our community. And I want to credit the council for identifying the need to have this conversation. During your budget deliberation back in June, the council did provide direction to staff that we bring this forward in the first part of the fiscal year to be able to have a conversation around possibilities for economic development. So just to jump into it, again, we are operating on the council's direction to bring this conversation to you this evening. And we brought this to you in combination with the recent discussions on water and housing. If you think about what makes a successful, viable community, there are a number of components you can think of. Good jobs, housing opportunities, utility services, you can think of public safety as well. These are all elements of what makes a community successful. Economic development is one of those key systems. Providing good jobs, an economic environment where there is tax generation, there is economic vitality to support our community is a key component of what the city has been focusing on for many years. So again, we're providing a foundation for what we have done and then a discussion around where we opt to go forward, getting your input and direction on items to bring back for further discussion. Just to start off with, as your council is well aware, economic development has long been a priority of this city, dating back to prior iterations of council goals, and then in the very first development of our current goal structure of having major city goals, economic development has been one of the constants throughout that entire time period. It's been a mantra of this council for many, many years. Your current work program for this fiscal year is divided into four different categories, and there's further information attached to the staff report to let you know of our activities in these different categories. But things like business retention and attraction, tourism development, commercial cannabis activities, and permit processing are four key categories of activities that define our current economic development program as it stands now. So far, we're early in the fiscal year, but we have seen a number of achievements already, one of which is to work closely with our Chamber of Commerce here, the South County Chambers, on a number of different business development and economic development opportunities. We've been working closely with our partner at Digital West on the public-private broadband network that has been installed in our community, which is currently being expanded to offer services across our commercial, industrial, and eventually residential areas of the city. We've been working with different property owners on three different hotel projects that have been in the development pipeline for quite some time, two on El Camino Real, and then, of course, the Grover Beach Lodge project, which is a private development project on state land at Pismo State Beach, where the city is an active champion and facilitator of this important project taking place on state property. And, of course, the city is a leader in the commercial cannabis space. We have really set the tone as a leader across the state. Just today, I've heard that we've been contacted from the cities of Torrance, Morgan Hill, and Hanford, wanting to come into Grover Beach to see what we've done, to see how we have established the industry in a safe, responsible, and economically beneficial manner for our community. So this has been one piece of our overall puzzle as we define our economic vitality. That being said, our work program is very limited this year from a funding standpoint. We have a whopping $25,000 allocated to economic development thus far this year. However, we realized that we were about to receive some additional one-time dollars. So we were holding off on additional expenditures for this conversation and subsequent budget discussions this year. I will say that we do have funding allocated this fiscal year to the Economic Vitality Corporation, and the President and CEO, Mike Manchek, is here with us this evening. And this is in support of the EVC's continual efforts to help build a stronger countywide economy and some key work products that they're working on for us and other cities. We also have $10,000 allocated to the chamber, which has not been spent yet, but it's been appropriated for the co-working space that the chamber is helping to bring forward in our community. And the chamber's president and CEO, Jocelyn Brennan, is also with us this evening, and she'll be able to speak more to this in her comments. So again, we have $220,000 in one-time funding that has been received. It's sitting in our account, ready to be put to good use to help further support our economy. The council, as you go forward, could also consider augmenting these dollars with additional funding opportunities. So I would suggest to not simply be limited to the $220,000. We do have some opportunities, but also keeping in mind that we're approaching our mid-year budget review coming up here in just a few months, which will provide an opportunity to perhaps drill down further on additional general fund reserves that could be used to support economic opportunities for us. So that's our current work program. Keeping in mind that back in 2017, the council took a big step forward in approving an economic development strategy. This came about from the very first CDBG grant funding back in 2014. We received funding to do a study that would give us a roadmap for our economic development opportunities going forward. We brought in an outside firm, BAE Urban Economics, and they put together a great study, a great strategy that council adopted in 2017 that provided a great roadmap that I would suggest be used and continue to be used to help shape our economic policies going forward. Four strategies in the plan. The first was building on local assets. The assets we have today, the Lodge Project and other hotel projects, our cannabis industry, the broadband network to help facilitate additional technology businesses, our train station, the overall business-friendly reputation, and then capitalizing on our location as Grover Beach, located right on the coast. And I would say in this strategy, we've done a tremendous amount in building on the local assets. Your council has allocated significant funding towards our train station expansion project, towards the broadband network, towards our cannabis industry. We have two retailers that have opened up thus far, and our third is about to open up on screen here, Urban Leaf, here in a matter of weeks, to help create greater investment, greater jobs, greater economic vitality in our community. The second strategy in the plan was to enhance our quality of life. So it's one thing to build on our assets. It's a second thing to really help enhance quality of life, not just for visitors and businesses, but for people who live here, for our residents. And we have taken a number of steps in the last several years in enhancing West Grand Avenue, addressing homelessness, one of the most challenging issues facing all of us in our community, partnering with local agencies to help provide a humane, responsive approach to homelessness. Developing our arts program, and this is one where I think we have some significant achievements in the last year. Credit to somebody in the audience here who has done a great job, Ms. Krista Jeffries, in helping to facilitate a public arts program that helps build aesthetics and community vitality, and one of the pictures on screen really helps to demonstrate that. And then trying to build a greater sense of family activities, family enhancements. Grover Beach is a family-friendly community. We have the youngest median age in the county. We have a tremendous amount of young families here in our community, and how we can capitalize on this is a key part of economic development as well. Third strategy is fostering collaboration. And in this strategy, we also have a great deal of achievements. We are known as a key actor in working on a regional level with our countywide Tourism Business Improvement District, the TBID, which is our Visit SoCal work to help grow our brand as part of the broader region. We have a good track record of working collaboratively with our neighboring cities, Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, and other communities, and we've been developing a good track record in working with our business community to see how we can add our business economy overall and what the city can do to help facilitate that development and investment. The fourth area is building image and awareness. And this is the area that I think is the most lacking in our approach. We've done a lot to build infrastructure and to help enhance quality of life. One area that is a gap is devoting resources and efforts towards marketing, branding, imaging, and helping to shape our identity going forward. So this is an area where I think we have some room for improvement and perhaps could be a focal point in the council's conversation here in a moment. So I guess to sum up, overall, the council should be pleased with the progress that we've made as a whole in taking the strategy and putting it to good use. It has not sat on a shelf. It has really been a foundation of what we've been doing for the last 2 to 3 years, particularly with our assets, particularly with the collaboration, enhancing our quality of life. But the biggest gap, again, is how we help to build our brand. We have a strong brand, a brand that is known throughout our region as a get-things-done, business-friendly, cutting-edge type of brand, but it hasn't gotten out further beyond that to the degree that we'd like to see. And I think that's a matter of resources, a matter of focus, priority, and there are some different ways to address that, and we'll have that conversation here in just a moment. So in identifying some possible activities just to help seed the ground for the council to think about, staff has identified two different categories of activities. And I would suggest that the funds from SB 1090 would not fund many of these. Just for example, a median strip in one block would be $200,000. That would be the entire SB 1090 allotment just in one particular enhancement. So some of these may be longer term. They may be more budget year as part of the budget process coming forward. They could be mid-year adjustments. But just to think about these improvements and how they support our economy. We could do some more work on West Grand Avenue. We have a master plan from 2011 that provided a great roadmap, but it's now 8 years old. That could be modified and prioritized. We have some additional lighting and trees and streetscape improvements that could enhance our West Grand Avenue streetscape. We could look at traffic calming, pedestrian, bicycle amenities to help provide a multimodal approach into West Grand Avenue. And then we could also boost our wayfinding and gateway signage that we've just begun putting up across our community. The second category of activities really focuses more on marketing and outreach. Again, I think one of the biggest gaps that we have in our current work to date. There's a lot more work we could do in tourism marketing and business development marketing. We have a great story that we have not adequately or completely told across the broader region and beyond. So there's a lot more work that we could do in the marketing and outreach area, along with business recruitment. We have the largest industrial land in the South County. We have a growing industrial economy, not just cannabis, but other manufacturing industries. We really could better connect the dots and help connect firms that are located in this region or outside the region to come into a business-friendly, high-quality-of-life community like Grover Beach. So there's more work we could do in that area. And then also, there could be an opportunity to have some grant funding for businesses to help with facade or sign improvements, to help improve their own aesthetics as we look to boost the overall look and feel of the community. So there could be some funding set aside for a grant program so businesses could help themselves as well. So just in conclusion, overall, I believe the city is very well positioned given your council's priority of economic development over many years, given our track record of results. We don't just say it, we do it. We get it done, and we build on that success. We're seeking your input and direction on what's next. And this is not just tonight. This will help frame our future conversations as part of our budget discussions and other council agenda items. And also as part of this, we are seeking your input on a proposal that has come to the city from the South County Chambers of Commerce to assist the city in economic development assistance. And Ms. Brennan will speak to this further in her comments this evening. And I'd like to get the council's take on this proposal. And if the council wanted us to consider it further, I would work further with Ms. Brennan to consider this and bring it back to the council for further discussion. And then ultimately, we're wanting to come back to you at a later date on additional items to help firm up scope, time, and resources to then narrow down to what is most important to the council using these funds and other funding that we could put towards it. So that's where we are, and I'm glad to answer questions from the council and open up the dialogue and be able to provide resources and information as the council desires.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation, that summary. So before we kind of have the dialogue, let's see if there's any specific questions for the city manager before we go out to the public. Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
I don't think I have any questions right now, just comments, and I want to hear from the public.
Very good. Councilmember Lance.
Same. I don't have anything at this time.
Councilmember Nichols.
Ditto.
And I'll be the fourth member of that ditto train. So we'll go ahead and open this up to the public. And because it isn't a formal presentation item or a formal action item, I will be a little bit more lenient with regards to timing. So I do have two speaker slips. We'll start with Mr. Michael Manchek and followed by Jocelyn Brennan. And then if anyone else wants to speak, please be prepared to come forward. Mr. Manchek, good to see you.
Thank you, Mayor Lee and members of the council. Mike Manchek with the Economic Vitality Corporation. So I'm really excited to be here, and I'm excited for several reasons. One, the partnership between the EVC and the city and working with your city manager has been really delightful, and I think it's going to pay off in spades in a way that I want to talk about. The economic strategy that was done by the city back in 2017 by BAE, I think it has the foundation by which the city needs to work. I think, though, that we, as in the collective we, the city, your partners like the EVC, like the chamber, I think we're embracing this idea of coming together, leveraging all of our resources and more, and really taking this to a new level. You know, we heard from two people in the audience about housing, being evicted from housing. Well, this conversation is not just about business. So we are all about attracting business, growing jobs, and attracting the investment in the community. But there's also an opportunity, I think, here to look at Grover Beach as a place where people are saying, I want to live there. I want to move my business there. I want to start my business there. I think the co-working space that the chamber is talking about, what's really interesting is every community in this county, almost everyone actually, is looking to either open or is planning to open a co-working space. And what that means, and we've been proponents of that for many years, is that there's actually that much demand for it. It's just the way that the world is working now. And I think that also in working with Jocelyn, there's opportunities that we can actually gain the attention of companies that are saying, we want to dabble in the Central Coast without first opening an office there. Well, that's one way to do it. Another city over the grade has actually done that very successfully. So we want to be huge supporters of that. At the same time, the EVC has gotten an EDA grant for which we are going to do an assessment of the communities. And by that, the question remains, when Diablo closes, then what? Answering those kinds of questions that we really need to do a deep dive on and figure out, what are we missing? What do we need to do as a community? I think that when we look at resources like the EVC just announced in its 25th year, by the way, which we're excited about, but there was a press release about an economic dashboard. It allows people that, whether they're parents, students looking for new career paths or looking for businesses or local government that says, what's happening to our economy? You can pull this thing up on your phone and say, wow, look at that. And you can click them, and it's very user-friendly, but it's a way to engage people. Because if people are more engaged, more of those seats in the audience are filled, and they are wanting to invest in the community. But this approach, which I think is very positive, has a lot of depth to it, which is this approach of taking housing, economic development, and attracting business and growing business here. They all go hand in hand. We cannot have one without the other. At the same time, I really think, and this is something your city manager and we have talked about for a long time, which is, and now I think it's going to come to fruition, which is really being the place, and I'll end with this, is being the place in the county for which really has a tremendous opportunity for attracting and growing business. Because if you look at the climate, if you look at the friendly nature of the city, the fact that the city is getting things done without talking about it, which is really fantastic. It's really just getting stuff done. And we're now in a place where we can attract those businesses. But there's businesses in lots of places both north and south of here, whether we're looking an hour or two or three, that would probably really embrace that. But as Matt Bronson points out, I think the county does a great job of promoting tourism. And tourism is a lifeblood of this community. At the same time, we need to do the same sort of resources and provide resources like that to promote business and get those jobs here that are high paying so that people can afford to live here and make the community thrive. So I just really appreciate being up here. I really appreciate the support of the city. I hope we can get more support in the future, but I think that this approach has to be a very balanced approach. We have to address the needs of the residents who have to live here and should live here and want to live here, along with those businesses that I think need to come here and grow the economy here in a really balanced way. So I'll stop with that. Thank you so much, and if there's any questions, I'll be here for those. Thank you.
You're good. Thank you for those comments, and I'm going to coin a new phrase, the demand for dabble. So hopefully we'll see where that goes. But next up, Jocelyn Brennan. Thank you. Thank you for joining us tonight as well.
Absolutely. Mayor Lee and council members, it's my pleasure to talk economic development. I could stay here all night talking economic development. It's something that the chamber is one of our strategic goals was economic development in Grover Beach. We did provide this proposal for your consideration and hopefully got a chance also to check out the economic development website for Grover Beach that we've been working on. That link was included in the proposal. I do think that as Mr. Brunson presented, Grover Beach has earned a reputation as being business-friendly locally. We talked to a lot of businesses about their experiences in this county, and that's why I applaud you for that. We have been very happy to be a partner on some of those strategic goals from the 2017 study. We have doubled our Grover Beach membership in the last year and a half. We have collaborated with several businesses here in Grover Beach. We have also helped work on the public art projects and that group, and we have appreciated participating in a partnership with the city on a lot of different things like Stone Soup, Leadership South County, and our monthly Grover Beach Steering Committee. I do have just a couple slides to put our proposal in context, and I'll keep it short. The city, let's see, where am I pointing? There we go. The business community of Grover Beach is made, this is just Grover Beach here, is made up primarily of small businesses. You can see that 1 to 4 employees, 305 businesses fall into that category. We have compiled data specific to Grover Beach, and I obviously won't present all of it, but I thought that really gives a nice snapshot of the idea of economic development in our proposal that you're looking at tonight is really what businesses have been able to grow and scale here and how did they do it. And secondly, the businesses that have not been able to grow and scale here, why not, and how can we assist them? And then lastly, what type of businesses do we want to be here and what type of jobs do we want to create here? So I will just give you a couple examples of economic development in other cities. Santa Maria, a lot of their medical businesses came to them and said, we need more doctors and physicians assistants. And they were able to attract AT Stills, an amazing a graduate program, and they're starting off with a cohort of physicians assistants. They'll add physical therapy, dentistry, things like that later to provide those head of household jobs in Santa Maria and also meet the need of the current businesses and the growth that's going to occur there. So that's an amazing example. Another local example is SLO Partners in Education have been doing Ticket into Tech, precision manufacturing. So they have been doing cohorts where they actually have a grant to help train some people here locally and then graduate them out into high-wage jobs that meet the needs of local employers. Their director, Mike Spicurla, is on our board, and we could work with them to really look at what do some of these Grover Beach businesses need to grow and scale and then actually provide a training cohort for them and take some of these maybe lower wage jobs and graduate those folks into head of household jobs, which is really our goal. Because right now the average Grover Beach wage is $14,000 under the national average, and we know that while Grover Beach is one of the most affordable places to live in our county, it's still very expensive to live here. So I thought I would just give you that snapshot. We would start with a comprehensive survey that we would use every form, mail. We would do a mass mailing, email, social media. We'd do direct outreach. We'd do some phone some phone banking and a call. Our goal would be to touch base with every business and have them do this survey to see, again, answer those questions. Are you scaling? Are you planning to grow? And if you're planning to grow, what employees do you need? Are you not doing well? Are you not able to grow? And really coming alongside those businesses and doing some business retention work there. And then once we mine the data that we have pulled together, the data that is provided by that survey, and then do some key outreach with those high-wage employers, we would formulate a strategy of what businesses do we want to attract here. And once that strategy is in place, obviously we would work with your council on that, but we would use that strategy to implement into the co-working, the website, and do an actual marketing campaign to those specific types of industries and companies that we want to attract here. And ultimately, we would do some consultation with them if they were from out of the area, and hopefully see some satellite offices or some startups here as a result of that marketing campaign. So with that, I'll take any questions that you may have.
Great. Thank you for that synopsis. Is there any specific questions for Ms. Brennan?
I think some may come up while we discuss, but not at this
time. Okay, cool. So I'll have you and Mr. Manchek kind of stand by, and then I'll also open this up to anyone else who wants to speak on this item. If anyone wants to come forward, please come forward, state your name. Come on forward.
Hello again. I'm really excited to see economic development be brought forth in front of the city tonight. I live on Ramona between 11th and 12th, and I can walk to sushi restaurants and thrift stores and a park and my kids' school, and I really love my place in Grover being within walkable distance of so many cool places to eat and hang out and enjoy. And I've noticed in the last several weeks how much better my life has been when I cut back on my car use and I walk and bike more. I was recently at a housing hearing in San Luis Obispo where I spoke in favor of a mixed-use development that was six stories tall and would have added 50 units of housing, some of it being deed-restricted affordable. And the conversation around it was related to the sort of failure of State Street in Santa Barbara. And the reason that State Street is not doing very well is because they did not put enough housing close to State Street. So there's lots of empty businesses in very expensive, very posh Santa Barbara because there's not enough housing. And when I think about why Grand Avenue does not have more, you know, kind of pedestrian-friendly amenities and places to go, I think it's related to the housing density along Grand Avenue. I know it's zoned for more higher-density housing. I'd like to see ways that the city can encourage more development in that area and allowing just more housing in general closer to Grand Avenue, maybe taking the R3 zone two or three streets back away from where it is now and leaving less land dedicated to R1 and R2. I've also noticed in my cutting back of my car usage that a whole lot of space on Grand Avenue is dedicated to storage, parking, maintenance, washing, fueling, repair, and sale of automobiles. We all use cars, most of us, I would imagine, but in light of climate action plans and the desire for young families to be able to walk around their cities, enjoy their communities, and get around safely on bike or on foot, I'd like to see the city prioritize non-automobile-related businesses in that strip of land and see if maybe it can be relocated to the industrial area or find some way to put it away from where we would like to see most of the interactions between residents in that area. I think the number that I just counted the on-site parking spaces on the south side of Grand from Pacific Coast Highway over to Oak Park, and I think it was close to 2,500 on-site parking spaces, not even on the street. And if you added up the square footage of those, plus, you know, the car lots and the car washes and the gas stations and all of it, I think if you found that total square footage, it would be pretty staggering for an area that we want to see as, like, this is Grover. And I just think those two interests of having lots of space for cars kind of counteracts the ability to have lots of space for people. And that's all.
Thank you for those comments. So is there anyone else who wants to speak on this item? Last chance. Okay. Seeing no one else come forward, we will go ahead and kind of softly close that and see if there's any discussion or questions for any members of the audience. Start with Councilmember Lance. General discussion.
Okay. I'm really excited about this, and I'm glad we're talking about it. There's a lot to kind of digest here. It's kind of daunting as far as where to start. I think where I would start is what we can do with the money we have now. Being the 220,000 SB funds, that would be my recommendation to start there. And then maybe after that, talk about maybe some other things we might want to do with our general fund money and our reserves, but maybe saving that for our budget discussion when that comes up in February.
Okay. Very good. Do you want to? I don't have any formalized approach for this, so
yeah, that's what I'm. Yeah,
so Councilmember Lance has kind of put something out there. So, anyone want to react to that? Or
yeah, I mean, if we want to just kind of jump into what can we do now? We have $220,000. A couple things I had been thinking about. I mean, first of all, I think the chamber's idea and the proposal sounds really good to outreach to businesses, because I think, and I've talked to the city manager about this a lot, I think we're doing a lot and we're getting a lot done, but we're not necessarily getting that message out. And I think on one hand, working with the chamber on getting it to businesses would be good. Mm-hmm. And then also just in our day-to-day, getting the word out to our community members, all the things we're doing. I mean, some of the comments that were made tonight about various road repairs, all of that's been discussed. We've had 9 meetings on it. Right. So clearly, the message isn't getting out. And I think that having a communications either firm or liaison, because I know like part of the economic development list is family activities and family amenities, and we have all these activities, and our parks and rec staff of 2.5 people is not only putting them all together but trying to get it out on Twitter and Facebook, and just having like a person that can help us get things out, and when we do have controversial issues, like help to maybe direct people away from just fishing the internet for gossip and actually being able to reach them with what is actually happening would be really helpful. So I would love to see part of this money go to reaching out to businesses as proposed by the chamber, but maybe also a communications person or firm or something to help us as a city communicate everything. And then another thing I was thinking about was just when we were talking about the sign ordinance and wanting people to upgrade their businesses, making some sort of pot of money for grants to businesses if they wanted to update their signs or if they just wanted to update their look or their facade, because I think something that would really work well on Grand Avenue is if more people had patios where people could sit outside and eat, like if it was a restaurant or something like that, so we could make a criterion but have some, I don't know, $50,000 or $100,000 just going directly back to businesses and saying, what can you guys do? You know the business world here, to make it more inviting. So I would love to see that, and I would love to see our business owners get that benefit that maybe people in other cities aren't getting. So those were just some of the things I thought about with just that small pot of money. I mean, I have other ideas that we can talk about with the other things.
Councilmember Nichols.
My input is that we have a lot of businesses around here that most people are not aware of whatsoever. We have a business district that most people have no clue that is there unless they take their cars up there for service or something like that. We half of the time I find out, oh, we've got a new business here. I hadn't even heard about it. How can we get past this? We need to get past this so that even our own people know what's here and available to them so that they can take advantage of it more. And the businesses need to be able to handle reaching out themselves.
I'll kind of weigh in on that as well, and I think, and I want to appreciate Jocelyn for coming forward with an approach, and thanks, Mike, for being here as well, because I know the EVC has been working long-term to try and kind of figure out a place for the county and specifically the city to kind of increase our visibility, increase our opportunities for folks, and I think what everybody has said is resonating, except for the implementation of that. So again, as we've talked through the cannabis industries and so forth discussions, it's all about opportunities. Yeah. We can only provide opportunities for people. People have to step up and take that opportunity. And I think that's hopefully some of what we can do with the 220,000 along with grant funds, seed funding to turn that 220,000 into $500,000, $1 million to really incentivize people to be here. So People Self-Help Housing has tried to be here. Habitat's tried to be here. They've never found an opportunity for them to actually build anything. But Ms. Jeffries' opportunity for R3 zoning, which goes in a mixed-use development, which then puts the downstairs businesses or the first-floor businesses to say, we want to be members of the chamber because everybody's walking to our business, and we're providing that opportunity. So somehow kind of incentivizing all of that. I think it starts with everything that has been said here tonight, and we now need to kind of distill it down into what three things or what four things do mm-hmm. we want to try and bring forward. And I think perhaps it's the start of the relationship with the chamber on this, continuing the relationship with the EVC, and perhaps as Miriam, as you said, the whether it's a communications firm or communications person that's working all together. I don't want to dilute all that, mm-hmm. but somehow bring the benefits of all three together, along with the let's go build stuff incentive that we've brought to this council and to the city staff. So all that being said, is I think we can do a lot of things. We can probably, as we've said in the past, we can do anything we want. But if we focus, then we're really going to be going to be able to break through some barriers. So,
shall we focus?
Yeah. So okay. Now, from our perspective, is there any questions? I did have a question for Jocelyn, for Ms. Brennan, just with regards to the proposal that you put together is awesome. So, and the relationship that has been represented between, say, the city of Morro Bay and their city and the city of Paso and their city with regards to the chambers, it's a little bit of a different relationship in the fact that you're a South County chamber. And I'm trying to I wanted to give you an opportunity to represent how you would focus on Grover while not forgetting about the rest of the South County, but really the incentives or the monies that we might invest with the chamber to make that Grover-centric. So how do we do that without losing the character of Grover and the regionalism that we're looking for?
Right, yeah. Well, we're very proud to be a regional chamber. However, we do want to focus our business attraction efforts on Grover. The survey would build out a strategic plan that was specific to Grover based on the assets that Grover has, and they are unique. So there is the fiber network. There are certain industries that absolutely have to have a fiber network, and they have to have a secured fiber network, which Digital West can provide. So that is unique to South County in Grover Beach. There's not really anywhere else that has made that investment that the city of Grover has made and had the foresight to make. And also the co-work space would be an incubator program. We have looked at several places. There's not very many that have become available since we've been on our search, but I think that we have potentially found the one. It is a large space, so it would work as a co-working space and as an incubator location for startups to help them scale and grow and provide those services to them. And I go to my board a week from tomorrow with a negotiation that we have with the landlord there. So fingers crossed that that could be moving along really soon. So that, again, that's specific to Grover Beach. And then also the business attraction, the marketing campaign, and the economic development website would all be specific to Grover Beach. And we don't have any plans to do that with any other community at this time.
So, and maybe one thought that actually you and I had talked about several months ago is there is a benefit to a business being a chamber member, and so there's an opportunity there for benefits of a chamber beyond just what a city can provide and so forth. So, maybe you can expand upon what focus could the chamber provide if every business in Grover Beach was a member of the chamber?
Well, that would be amazing. One is that the Grover Beach businesses have been challenging to engage, so I'm very proud that we've doubled our membership in Grover Beach in the last year and a half, because doubling it somewhere else might have been easier, but in Grover, that's a real badge for us. And secondly, the way chambers work, they are membership-based, and so if we did have an economic development contract with the city, that would open up the chamber to be able to work with every business. And there are approximately 946 business tax certificates in Grover Beach, which is a lot. Not all of those that includes people who did business here once, so not all of those are permanent businesses. There are 679 that are reporting one or more employee, and there's like I showed in the slide earlier, there are a lot of those. The majority of those are small businesses. The IRS says a business with 200 or more is not considered a small business, and we have one, which is Volet in Grover Beach, that has more than 250 employees. So I hope that answered your question.
It did. With that, so how many businesses in Grover, if you happen to know the number, are members of the chamber?
Yes, we have right now today in the zip code, not including post boxes, not including that zip code, we have 89 Grover Beach businesses as members. I think we probably have about another 50 with a Grover Beach P.O. box, but that means that they either do businesses in multiple places and live in Grover Beach, or they are a home-based business.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Brennan? Okay. Please stand by. So where else do we want to have this conversation?
Sure. I would like to come back to Pro Tem Shaw's mention about having an incentive basket. I think that's definitely one thing we should consider. Depending on how we want to use it, whether we want to roll it out with the sign ordinance or make it a little bit more open, and then obviously dictate how much money we want to put towards that. But I think that's an appropriate thing. I think we should definitely focus on number four of the economic vitality strategy, and that being the lacking in what we've done. Personally, just have moving here less than 2 years ago. Grover Beach is awesome. I love living here and I love being a part of this community, but I do feel like there's a little bit of an identity question mark. And I think for so long, from my perspective, just as a resident, there's been a lot of people waiting on the Lodge Project. and I hope that goes through and a big proponent of it and think it would do an amazing things for our community, I also think that we should also find an identity outside of that. We have a lot of things going on right now with cannabis, with Digital West, all positive things, but it lends itself to the question of who are we. So from a business perspective, I think the proposal from the chambers is great, but I think there's two parts to brand awareness and marketing, and I'm by no means a branding expert, but I think not only is it from a business perspective, but also from just a community tourism perspective. So not only do we want the businesses to be able to be marketed out there, but also why aside from the business, why are people coming here? What is our identity? Why should people come visit? Why should they come stay? And why should they come purchase things from our businesses? My question, and because I haven't been here long enough, is our brand, I mean, our slogan, our motto, whatever you want to call it, seems to be kind of surrounding this spread your wings, butterfly situation. And I'm just wondering how long it's been like that, where that came from. Is that our brand? I know that sounds funny coming from someone sitting on city council, but I really don't know.
Yeah.
What does anybody want to give me a history on that?
I don't know if I can give you a history because I'm not sure who would be here the longest.
Okay, so it's probably the chief. Back a while. Okay. Yeah.
So and yet, if I recall, it was also something that was very organically put in place without a formal discussion.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I thought it was a formal process.
It was a semi-formal process.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Mr. Bronson.
Yeah, just to add to that, it was prior to my time, but from all accounts, it was a process where we did have an outside consultant, a brand consultant, working with the city. So it was organic in the sense that there was a desire to create a better, more definable brand for the city that we had gone forward and established ourselves in different ways, but there wasn't a unifying brand. The interest of the council was to work on that, and so there was an effort to secure an outside brand consultant to do some work and some color schemes and a slogan, which led to the slogan that we have as an unofficial mantra. I wouldn't say it's our official adopted brand or seal, but it does tie into spreading your wings, which kind of connotes to there's opportunity, there's affordability, there's a place for everybody within our community, and that was organically woven into a lot of our materials and presentations as you see every other Monday.
Okay. I just don't think it's stuck.
Yeah.
I don't think it has. From my personal, I didn't hear it until I came on city council. So I would suggest talking about maybe looking at, in addition to what we can do with business retention and attraction, also looking at finding a new approach to our identity and how we're going to market ourselves, because this can set the tone as we wait for the Lodge Project, other hotels, and I'm curious as to, you know, there's kind of a few ways to approach this. One, going with a professional, which I think is important because people do this for a living, but maybe an opportunity to engage the community a little bit. You know, people live here. They know what they like about this place or what they think about it, and I think it could be a fun opportunity. I have to give my husband a little credit here because, you know, he is a resident and wanted to kind of have a say too and started throwing slogans at me, and I was like, stop. but I thought, you know, it could be an opportunity if we wanted to talk about ways to also engage the community, and if we are going to go that route, whether we want to create a format for that.
Yeah, I think those are good points. I think the spreading the wings, it never appealed to me because it was based on a butterfly grove that's technically in Pismo.
Exactly.
So, but one thing I, just in thinking about it and thinking about how to redo it, I'm kind of split because I'm thinking of, well, do we want a new slogan based on what we are now, or do we want a new slogan based on what we are to become? And what I see us becoming, or what I would love to see us become, is known for our food and our art, because I feel like filling retail spaces these days is not easy, and people, when you can order everything online, but people will travel for food, and we only have, you know, a few new restaurants that have dabbled in Grover Beach, and they're doing amazing, and I wonder if there's a way, just as you're saying, as we wait for the lodge and the hotel, that we could push and incentivize restaurants to come here. If we could, we've talked about this on and off for a long time, but just incentivizing food trucks to be here. Like, the portion of Grand Avenue that we describe as between nodes. I mean, what if we make it easy for food trucks to be parked there on a certain day or every day? And with all the new community murals coming in and hopefully many more, you know, making a walking art tour and so, and with all the new utility boxes that will be done. So I would love to see us become known as like the trendy foodie little niche place by the beach. I mean, Pismo has a lot of restaurants, but they tend to be a lot of those more generalized tourist food, and maybe we could have a niche there. So that was something, because I know we were talking about just the $220,000, but as we talk about the future and incentivizing tourism, I want to see more pedestrian amenities on Grand to get people walking and biking, and have places for people to walk and bike, which would be see art and go to restaurants and places. So those would be ways I'd like to focus outside just the initial money.
Yeah, and I don't think we need to wait to brand ourselves to what we are to become, because we could be waiting a while to get to that point. I think you make a good point in making sure that if we choose to go down a route of not a rebranding, because I don't feel like we really have a cohesive brand, but go down that route, it be able to be open enough to where, you know, we can grow into it as well, but not necessarily have to wait until we're, you know, grown-ups to have a brand, so to speak.
So the boardwalk is an asset that we have that we can't really make too much use of. It's great in a picture. But I beyond, you know, okay, we have a boardwalk. You can walk on the boardwalk. Once the hotel is there, and other amenities are going up, and if we can get Grand Avenue storefronts rehabbed, that would make a huge difference. And would go in with the foodie, trendy things and get people downtown and then down to the beach.
So let's capture all of that, put it into three words, and give the city manager okay. direction. So with that, I'll let the city manager interject.
Yeah, just a comment regarding the branding idea, which from a staff perspective, I think could be very powerful for the emerging brand that we're becoming organically, but having some intentionality behind setting that brand. What I've seen from a number of communities around the area and state that have done such an effort is that while they may bring in somebody to help orchestrate the process, there is substantial community engagement. Mm-hmm. It becomes a bottoms-up approach where there's crowdsourcing different ideas, entities.
I love that.
But you have somebody to help shape that into a direction that produces a product at the end.
Right.
Sometimes if it's too organic, you don't have an outcome that's actionable and definable. So there can be a balance of both. A process, somebody to guide us, but then a lot of community engagement outreach so that your husband and others could contribute into that process and shape that going forward.
I won't even tell you what he wanted. I like that idea.
So with all of that as context, mm-hmm. I mean, I think we've got any number of different spokes on the wheel that we can go in. So, but let's see if we can kind of craft some direction for the city manager to kind of begin with. So let's start with the discussion with the proposal that the chamber has in front of us. So is there kind of consensus for the city manager to continue working with the chamber on something more formalized with that?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I see it in thirds. That's kind of how I'm seeing it. The chamber proposal being a third, branding being a third, and business incentives being a third of what we can do with this money. Now, I know that it's not a lot of money, but it may be something that we can start with in each one of those three things that we've discussed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I would. So it sounds like we have consensus there. I would like to add just kind of a speed break. A little bit on that. I know there's the initial discussion was about an 18-month contract, and the city manager and I have talked a little bit about how do we get that into more of a fiscal year kind of opportunity. And so do we do a and obviously a 6-month trial contract is going to be difficult because the metrics are going to be very difficult to achieve unless there's an understanding there, but with kind of a recurring clause there. But maybe that becomes a question for the city manager and the chamber, Ms. Brennan, to see if that's even worth putting that defining time frame on there, or if there's another time frame that is more amenable to that starting point. And I'll go to the city manager first.
Yeah, just on that point, there are a number of different ways you can slice the time frame, but the 18-month time frame could be looked at as starting January 2020, 18 months would get through June 2021. So that would span the rest of this fiscal year, and then an entire future fiscal year. And then if the city and chamber believed it was a benefit to continue, then that could be on a fiscal year cycle from that point forward. Mm-hmm. And we also could put in a six-month check-in. So if we went forward beginning in January, we could have a formal check-in before the end of this fiscal year to make sure it's working out as we intend, to recalibrate if need be. So that could be built into an agreement as well.
Because there is going to be some ramp-up period in that first 6 months, is to say, I think a six-month check-in is a good.
I had a question. I don't remember seeing it in my packet, so we don't have a specific cost on this yet because we're still kind of talking about it. Is that right?
There's a request for $125,000 for services.
Okay, so
for the whole
18 months,
it's broken down into I think it's page 284. Or I think it's very high level, though. I'd like to see maybe a little bit more detail, especially when it comes to, like, there's $30,000 listed for, like, a marketing campaign with promotional videos and this type of thing. And I think that in that respect, that might go hand in hand if we decide to do more branding. I mean, I would hate for us to spend so much money on marketing campaigns for businesses if we were going to, you know, subsequently also change our complete brand and slogan. So, does that make sense?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on that. So part of the idea was that we would go out and get these, what they call in the marketing world, assets. So we would send someone out, a professional out with a camera, to get some really good photos of Grover Beach, which have been a struggle to find even for Visit SoCal and for the chamber. So we would have someone go out and do all that. They would also do these promotional videos that would be more specifically directed towards but those assets could be used for a tourism website. So we could get, you know, more bang for the city's buck with using those as an incentive for businesses to come here, but also just one of the links, if you've looked at the economic development website, has a, exploring Grover Beach, and we would build that up with those assets of where to eat, the boardwalk, you know, all the amenities that Grover Beach has. So those could be used for multiple things, and we would obviously give license to the city to use those as well.
I had a question about the proposal. One thing we've talked about on and off with you guys is making our own Grover Beach, not tourism district, but business district. Could this be the time, and could this somehow be worked into your proposal?
I think that would be something that we could work towards, is doing, you know, outreach to businesses and education to businesses on what that is and what that means. There's business districts, and then there's also, you know, a T-bid. But until then, I think that we could make a really nice tourism website, and then eventually when there's more hotels online, a T-bid could take that over and focus, and, you know, T-bids just solely focus on tourism marketing. But I think it would set up the lodge and other hotels that are coming online to have something started. Mm-hmm. It would set them up for success to have, you know, something more than the Visit SoCal page right now. They do a great job, but there's no one specifically keeping their eyes on that. And so if you look under, like, Grover Beach Breweries, there's a stock photo, mm-hmm, that just, you know, like a black and white beer mug.
So as part of this proposal, the chamber could a little bit step into that tourism role, because I know exactly what you're talking about. I've been, like, not liking our representation on that website for a long time, and it's actually better than it was.
It is.
So you can help us with that.
Right. Okay. So not only could we use these assets that are proposed here, video and video footage and photos for a tourism website, but we would also be able to then supply those to Visit SoCal and say, look at all these great photos we have of Man Rock. Let's put those on the brewery listing and really kind of beef that up and maintain it a little bit more. Because right now the only one who has access to it is Visit SoCal because there is no TBID.
Right. Okay. That'd be great.
So with kind of that as a slight backdrop or context, the other person that's not in the room, obviously, that would need to be part of the some level of marketing effort is Digital West. And they've kind of represented to the city that with their fiber, they would be doing an outreach. And it appears to be a more of an underground outreach at this point. I'll endeavor to say that. So I'm wondering how we partner either with the clusters of the EVC, with the Chamber, and with Digital West to really make this an visible marketing for those efforts. So I don't know if the city manager wants to add anything or if I'm off base.
I think that's a fair assessment. Digital West is doing some degree of marketing, but right now their main focus is to build out the network. So we have what's now known as a freeway. We have a freeway that connects to certain spots. Now they're trying to build out the off-ramps from the freeway to expand to different areas. So that's really their main focus is build out, construction, installation. They've done some outreach as part of that. But I think other partners, such as the Chamber, the EBC, other partners, could really take up that baton and run with it more effectively and let Digital West focus on building out the system.
Okay. And I would say that is one of the main, you know, business attraction tools listed. So we would have to partner with them on that. We would have to be in close communications with them on how to utilize that, who to reach out to, tap into their database of people that aren't just here local, but also other, you know, people who are using fiber networks, and work with them on that.
Okay, very good.
Can I ask you, Ms. Brendan, just a question on capacity, because I know we touched base on this slightly, a little bit with Mayor Lee's comments about how will you focus on Grover Beach, but just as far as manpower.
Right.
What does that look like for you?
Well, the last thing I'd want to do is overtax our already
exactly.
taxed staff. So I'm the only full-time person at the Chamber. We have three people who are 30 hours a week. So the way I envision this is that we would bring some of those people up, give them a few more hours to take some things off my plate. I would set this up. I would set up the survey. I would really drive this. And once it's set up and successful and hopefully come back in 18 months, and at that point, the way I'm picturing it is that by then, the co-work space is up and running, and that income, hopefully, to the Chamber will help supplement a full-time position for someone for Grover Beach. So they would continue to focus on the business attraction and retention and being that business engagement liaison, and they would also manage the co-work space. And it would be a shared, it would continue to be a partnership, but I think between those two things, we could have someone dedicated just to Grover Beach long-term.
Thank you.
With someone fully housed within that co-work space.
Yes, that would be their main office. And the place that we're looking at would be fantastic for trainings, workshops, meetings. It's a big space. And of course, we would have a desk there for city staff or council.
Okay. Very good. Anything else with regards to that point? Great. Thank you very much. Great. Okay, so we've got that point of focus.
Yeah, I think that would be great. But I'm just looking at, money-wise, we started with about $220,000. That would bring us down to about $100,000,
so, right? Which is a very good point. I think the part of that six-month check-in is there's not a anticipation, at least not on my part, and make sure that from the city manager's standpoint that we're clear that $125,000 should have check-ins. And if there is something else that we'd like to do with that as part of the budget, whether that becomes an augmentation towards grant underwriting or general fund subsidy towards that or some other funding source from the city. So I would say that 125 is over the entire 18 months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
Correct. And that does include, as the mayor pointed out, one-time upfront marketing that would be done early on and then some ongoing assistance work over the balance of that time period.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that is a way to look at spacing out. Also, In 3 months' time, you'll be having the mid-year budget review discussion and early forecast into our next several fiscal years. So that'll give you a glimpse into what we're projecting this fiscal year and what capacity we have for additional one-time items that could come forward immediately. The business grant program, which you'll get to in a moment, could fall into that category, timing with the sign ordinance implementation and other facade improvements that could be taken on beginning in the second half of the fiscal year.
Yeah, and just going back to the, I think that would be, you know, timely and just a very tangible way to use the funds in a way that clearly promotes our businesses. But also just going back to my other comments of really needing someone to help with communication, because I know we've talked for a long time. I mean, most cities have either an assistant city manager or somebody, and we don't have that. And our city manager can't just be tweeting all day. Not everybody can do that. So I want us to not forget that, because to me, it feels like sometimes communication and miscommunication seeps into everything we do and everything our staff is trying to do. And sometimes it makes things so much less efficient. So
maybe that's a good jumping off point for that discussion of whether it's internal staffing or external consultants to have that PIO, a public information officer, type of realm. So I don't know if that's where you were going to go or.
I remember having conversations just kind of generally with the city manager. I know we had allocated a new position potentially to provide some flexibility. What was it? It was for a.
An analyst position?
Yes, or a like a paid intern. I know. Do you remember having these conversations with me? Maybe it was one-sided.
In last year's budget process, one of the early requests was to add additional capacity to an existing halftime position in Parks and Recreation to bolster time capacity for communication and engagement. For various reasons, we took that off the table because of the individual left the city, and we wanted to revisit it as part of this conversation, frankly, on economic development, on communication needs as a either full-time or dedicated position or contract role that could be based in my office to look at citywide communication needs in general.
Yeah, it was something in the city manager's office. I remember it being on an agenda a few months ago.
There was, as the city manager said, I think it was a matter of a long-range economic discussion that we would take up right now.
Well, so questions.
Right, but it was agendized. It was on a consent agenda, I believe, for setting aside a – am I the only one remembering this?
I think that was an item to set a salary scale for a position that hadn't been created yet. I remember. Yeah. So I think it was an intern position with that, but the position was created, but it wasn't palletized position allocation list.
Okay.
So I don't think I think the classification was developed, but the position wasn't created.
Yeah, I think what am you may I be referring
right?
To
we're it? Not in active recruitment by any means. I remember this being discussed at some level.
Tell me if I go awry here, but we created the classification,
yes.
But we didn't create the position.
The actual open position, correct.
So this could be the time where we either create a position or we create a opportunity for a consultant RFP.
Right. My question would be to the city manager, what do you think you need to communicate better? Do you need a person? Do you need a group or you know, what does that dollar amount look like to get started?
Well, I think there are different approaches for how we get there. I'm certainly a communication-minded city manager with a need for further assistance in how we actually produce it. And that's a key component, and I'm hearing that message loud and clear from the council as well, and I appreciate that. What I think may be most effective immediately to get this off the ground is to look at a contract role. A number of other cities do look at contract resources from a communication firm that could provide immediate expertise in a way that would deliver immediate results versus hiring a new position that would take time in the recruitment, take time in getting somebody up to speed, learning our system. That may be a longer-term endeavor. I think there is a need for additional staff assistance and special projects and coordination work, but just to better tell our story, I think a contract route may be the best approach initially to get something in place even as soon as January to be able to get the message out.
I just kind of want to understand where we're getting at before we start deciding on who to hire and what, in what capacity, but from a communication standpoint, just so I know what we mean by communicating better. Mm-hmm. Underneath the economic vitality umbrella, I mean, communicating better with our residents about what we're doing, streetscapes and projects and these kinds of things is important, but I don't, does that fit under economic vitality and what we're trying to do as far as growing our brand and our business? And do you see where I'm going with that? Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, you know, what type of communication are we talking about here?
I think in my mind we have kind of two things going, because what we're doing with the chamber would be more like communicating out to businesses, but what we're talking about with the city manager would be more communication with our residents. And you know, we've done all these things, but I bet if you knocked on 10 doors in Grover Beach, like two would know that we have this fiber network. And mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. Well, does that really boost our economy? But on some levels, it does, I think, because when our own residents don't know the good things that are going on or don't understand where we're going with things, and we're just charging ahead, and they're back here saying, why are you doing all this? You know, I think that miscommunication sometimes hinders progress. So I just think on an operational level, it's time. And I don't know if it direct ties to economic development, but in my mind, it ties to everything in our progress overall. So in that way, it does. I don't know.
There used to be a monthly newsletter, but with staff resources being very understaffed and with the city manager doing it all and so on and so forth, it just was not physically very feasible, and it was not economically feasible at all. So it just went away. But that's one of the kind of things that we need to put on our website, that a little billboard that, you know, we've got a new business in town, we've got a new restaurant opening, we've got this coming up, that coming up.
And I'll kind of continue that line of conversation, the fact that I think the newsletter also kind of went away because we all got phones. And it's so much easier to look there and opening up your city water bill right. In there. Everybody's looking around, going, okay, where's the water bill? Okay, throw everything else behind me type of thing. So I think there's different ways across the lines to communicate. But I think back to Mayor Pro Tem Shaw's and all of our discussion is I think we need that information highway. And I'm hearing that from the initial conversation from the city manager as a contract person is going to be the most effective instrumental way to get there. But I also don't want to just limit it to business discussion, because I think the chamber is going to have a large role in that. I think we need to kind of reach into our community's homes and where, whether it's, let's have something at the soccer fields because that's where our families are on Saturday mornings, or the public outreach for the art project. So I think I wasn't able to join this weekend, but if I looked in some of the photos, there was a maximum of 8 to 10 people there, probably more 2 to 4 people at the same time. It'd be great to have 20 people there, right. Or have two events going on at the same time with 40 people and then 100 people, and kind of growing that. We did try, and hopefully we'll continue, some public outreach barbecues for residents on the north and south, and mm-hmm. I think continuing that mm-hmm. is only going to improve our level of communication, and so we have more people that know we have soccer fields, or we have a basin where a rugby team can come by and happen to see, hey, we've got a place to participate. And then the restaurants in town had 150 people descend upon them, and all of the restaurants were busy in that off day. So I think as long as we kind of fashion this discussion towards the most effective means for the city manager to get information out there and then have the community be available and ready for that message as well, I think is something that we need to work on. City manager.
I've heard three different types of communication come up from the council, and all three are important. One is business marketing, which is directly related to business development, recruitment. Secondly is broader community branding to help fashion a brand identity for the city, which, again, ties back into business and investment. And the third is general communication for our community, for residents, for visitors, for businesses. And that also has a connection to economic development, maybe not as direct as the first two, but it's certainly part of the overall puzzle. This is that third piece is an example where the council may opt to provide direction to me to look at some other funding sources to help bolster what we can do from a broader communication standpoint, not just be limited to the SB 1090 funds, which are tied to economic development per se, but you could provide direction to me to seek further information, seek some proposals from some different firms, and then consider augmenting SB 1090 funds with general fund dollars of a limited amount to help provide better communication on a general level, which ties to economic development, but is not just limited to that one category. Mm-hmm. So I think that could be an example of where the council could make a policy decision to support additional communication with other funding sources.
So what's kind of the thought with what the city manager just kind of presented? So I think I'm open to hearing how that continues to play out and giving him and his staff some length of time. Maybe it's an update at the mid-year report as to see what kind of progress is made and or if it comes back sooner than that. So what's the consensus of the council?
I would agree with that. I would think if they're prepared to come back sooner, I feel like the sooner our communication with our residents improves, the sooner everyone's lives are easier and happier. So that, to me, is like an ASAP thing. I'm sick of getting beat up for things that people just don't hear about because they haven't heard, and it's frustrating for everybody.
And I know one of the things that the city is embarking upon is a new website early in the calendar year. And so perhaps that's that we use that as the hopeful update period or sooner, as Mayor Protem Shaw indicated, as that mechanism for how to improve that level of communication.
Yes, as far as SB 1090 funds are concerned, I think, you know, speaking to the three communications, one, business communication, leave that to the chambers. That's what they do. That's what they're good at. General communication with our residents, I just don't know if we can connect those very well to the SB 1090 funds. I think that may be an opportunity to look at other funding sources, as Mr. Bronson noted. So I would be supportive of him looking at what that may cost and how we may fund it. I think with the remainder of the SB 1090 funds,
let's kind of get a consensus on that. And I saw Mr. Manchak moving, so I'm thinking he might want to share something, unless you're just moving in your chair. Okay, gotcha. Okay, I thought you were about to.
I was about to impart some wisdom.
Okay.
In the same vein, though, I was going to talk about the second communication. Is that where you're going as far as?
Yeah. So from that standpoint, let's figure out getting back to the 1090 funds, which I think is where you were going. So yes.
So I see the general communication with our residents as important as well, but I think that it may be something to look at as far as separate from this and different funding sources. I think I personally would like to see what a branding process would look like, how a outside company could help facilitate that with community engagement and narrowing that. And then that's kind of as far as those three communications go, that's my thoughts on those.
Okay. So I'll add a little bit to that, only in the standpoint that there was discussion on the West Grand Avenue. And I think that becomes, again, part of that almost community vision that we're looking at. And so I think that's where I'd like to roll that into that as well, only from the standpoint is that we're going to be updating our zoning codes with additional funding from SB2 and some of the discussion we did this evening. And I think we can kind of tailor some of that in conjunction with how we envision Grand Avenue becoming, which then plays into how we communicate that vision. And so I may be getting too far afield here, but I think it's
a really good point. Yeah, the mayor makes a really good point with that, because I think when you – I didn't even think of it that way. I mean, I'm just thinking of it as a day-to-day basis. But what I wanted to talk about in the long-term discussion, meaning when we come back in February and talk about our larger portions of our budget, is West Grand Avenue. Mm-hmm. And I think I would love to see more pedestrian and bike amenities. Every single person asks us to slow the traffic. Well, one way to do that is a protected bike lane. But clearly, we need more communication with people and more outreach and more support by businesses before we do anything having to do with parking or, you know, switching things around. And if you ask any resident of Grover, how do you think we should change Grand Avenue, you will get a different answer. Mm-hmm. And we have to start getting in front of that, or we're going to keep having the same mishmash of things that just haven't worked. So that is really, I didn't even think of the communication from that perspective, but if we're ever going to get anywhere with redoing, I don't know if it's redoing or updating the 2011 plan, we are going to need heavy amounts of communication. And while I would love to see the rebranding, my small experience with rebranding is it's a lot of money. And I just don't know if we're there yet with what we are. So I don't know.
And I'll echo that in that we are Grover Beach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So do we need a slogan? So I don't know if we do, but Mr. Manchak is about to share something with us that maybe we do.
Well, not a slogan, but the one thing I hadn't heard, which I'd like to make sure that we're mindful of, is the businesses that are not here.
Right.
So the businesses that may be far away that say, I've never heard of this place before.
Right.
So
right.
If we could leverage the same resources and the same effort to also reach them, mm-hmm. that the partners can use to then tell our story and have people discover Grover, all the better.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't think it's necessarily – I'm not set on a slogan. I'm just using it as an example. But we need some cohesiveness because I think we're – you know, we have a lot of different things going on, and we need to be able to tell our story in a way that makes sense to the person that's never heard about us. Mm-hmm. And I think that requires professional help but also some community engagement as well. Mm-hmm. So that's why I like the idea Mr. Bronson brought up of an outside company that's able to facilitate that process, not only by instrumentalizing the community outreach, but also funneling it into a final deliverable. And I just like to know what that costs, because I haven't had any experience with rebranding, so I don't know that it's expensive.
Yeah. And I'm not going to put Mr. Bronson on the spot, but Deborah, did you want to come up and say something?
Hi, I'm Debbie, and one of the things that I wanted to respond to is the beach. I go to the beach all the time, and I meet people from all over the country. I don't know if you guys realize there's people from Africa, there's people mm-hmm. from Sweden, and they're saying, you guys are so beautiful here. It's so lovely here. You're spoiled. I said, we never take advantage of it, and they said, you shouldn't. But if there's something, because they really like that area, if there's some type of business that could come back, you know, my imagination goes really wild here, but computers, the technology is so much that you could bring a little piece of that back into one of a businesses that would carry that on through, like you're really there. They really enjoy seeing all the whales and all the animals that live around this ocean around us, and get a little bit more education and get more like a 3D or something to that effect. I think that would start bringing people to the city, because like, wow, we're here at the beach, we see in this, and let's go get a little bit more education on this, or teach our kids a little bit more about this is my thought on bringing tourists. And I really like the idea of different foods, of bringing it back, because everybody has McDonald's, everybody has Denny's, everybody, but bring something that's different, even if we have to change it every so often, that will keep bringing people back, that make us different. So we're not Shell Beach. We're not Morro Bay. You know, we're Grover Beach, and this is what we have to offer.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
I think that's such a good point, because we're talking about all these brandings, and we didn't even talk about adding the beach.
Yeah, so I mean,
that's a huge asset. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Our name can be our brand.
Right.
So, I mean, Grover Beach.
But I think it'd be worth at least getting the proposals to see what it looks like. So we know, is that a this-year thing, a five-year thing? Like, how much does it cost? It would be good to know.
Is there good consensus to start down that path? So I interrupted you. Apologize.
Yep, that's a great point. I think I could utilize my city manager network of communities that have done this and also seek proposals to really drill down on how much this would cost us.
Great, and it'd be good to see what that cost is. With that as an unknown placeholder in the overall amount of the 220 funds, perhaps we go to some level of grant discussion or business outreach discussion, or whether it's the sign ordinance, business grants, and very similar to our Cash for Grass program, where we incentivize people to conserve and so forth. I think this. If we put aside some level of funding, develop a program around that, that's going to give us an opportunity to kind of re-image or freshen the image on Grand Avenue and in our business corridors. So let's have a little discussion around that. Who's got some thoughts there? Who
wants I would to love to see, first of all, just when we were crafting the sign ordinance, I went along with it and I agree with it, but it bothered me that people would actually almost be incentivized to never repair their signs or whatever, because once you make a repair, then you have to change it. So I would, you know, first and foremost, love to see people encouraged and incentivized to make those changes and get up to speed with the ordinance sooner than later. Also, you know, then I don't want to penalize or leave people out whose businesses are already beautiful and they're already up to speed with the signs. So maybe even some funds just for people who want to further beautify their businesses in general. And maybe we even put some funds toward businesses willing to do these community murals, because that is a way that to give our town character and a brand very quickly. And what if people could at least get money for the paint? If they'd be willing to sponsor a community mural, that might get those going really fast. Let me get that and get them stressed out. But
so let's use that and not to short circuit any discussion. But do we want to put an initial dollar amount to that? Do we say let's put $30,000 towards that effort and see who takes advantage of that opportunity? Towards signage, landscape improvements, art improvements, and having a kind of giving some, whether it's direction this evening or for the city manager to come back with, here's what I heard, could be incentivized programs. And we've put a dollar amount to it and to see who steps forward and takes that opportunity that the city brings forward. So
I would want to maybe do 50 with an option then for more if it's used up.
I agree with that. I think we need at least 50 to make a difference potentially.
Okay. So I'd be willing to go towards 50, but I would like to do one thing with part of that funding is kind of encourage staff to go find other economic grants programs, whether it be, again, part of our CDBG program or some other program, federal program or state program that's out there to say, okay, we've got $50,000 that we're going to use for these incentives.
Right.
State, you have another $1 million that people can tap into and say, okay, if you want to do this, we're going to incentivize this amount, but you can go to this other program and get your entire facade.
Return on investment.
Return on investment, yes, correct. Or leverage those funds.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which then, so 50. We'll say 50,000 for that. Yeah. Okay. So now is there anyone who has any complete other thoughts beyond this? I mean, let's say for instance, as we're updating our zoning code, let's say we incentivize the first three businesses that come forward and say, if you are going to do affordable housing or below market housing, and you're going to incentivize towards your parking, we will waive all of your planning fees.
Sure.
Do we want to go down that path? And I didn't even see the city attorney squirm at that. So that was,
think that would be great, but I think that's kind of, we talked about that during affordable housing, and I think we were all on board with that. Right. But I don't know if that goes with this or that, or it's all together.
I think I'm supportive of it.
You're saying to use the funds as kind of a little bank account
so that we use them almost as a... That would be great.
So if we're going to incentivize people to actually come do development, see how we can craft that to encourage that.
You might be getting
I'm
a look now.
I'm going to ask Mr. Buckingham, just so we have some tangible, as far as planning fees go, I only know how much a remodel of a 3-bed, 2-bath house is, so I don't know what planning fees can be upwards of, or permitting fees for a larger development, multi-unit.
We don't have a lot of examples of those.
You
could easily have, it's environmental review costs that adds to the planning review cost. So while staff review might be $5,000 on a medium-sized project, an environmental document, in the case of 1598 El Camino Real, even done in-house, that's $20,000-$30,000. So that really gives you the scale of its environmental review that costs more than
would an EIR be required for, let's say, a unit on Grand that wanted to do a multi...
Not very likely. Okay. You'd have to have some kind of overriding environmental issue in order to have to do an EIR.
Okay.
And again, the state's evolving. We have more and more infill exceptions, which can do away with environmental review to some extent. So...
Maybe I've gone too far with that, and maybe the other thought is, if people do come in, and we've just provided the $50,000 bucket, but if we say if you are coming in and you're a new business, and maybe we waive some fees if you do X, Y, and Z. So maybe we don't need to go all the way to brand new development, but maybe there's a sliding scale of sorts in there to kind of provide that incentive. So I just figured I'd go out as potentially as far out on a limb as we might want to go.
Maybe. Because this isn't necessarily, I mean, we obviously are making kind of some policy decisions about how to use this money, but it may be now that staff has an idea of kind of where we're going as far as wanting to make it easier for businesses to beautify, expand, remodel, come in, build, maybe it might make sense for them to brainstorm some programs and some framework.
Craft some language
that could make sense to the things that we've talked about.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, and maybe if there's thought processes that we can do, I mean, one of the things I've heard in my time on the council is let's make all of the street signs on Grand Avenue consistent in color, size, name, positioning, and all of that. So, or do we go in completely other direction and say, let's take one of our K-14 streets and make it a solar street, or make one of our intersections and put a solar array in the middle of that and light up one of the blocks around that, but it also becomes a message board in the middle of our street, and so therefore it's an economic investment, but it's also a opportunity for solar grants to come forward and someone to be hey, now it's an art project in the middle of a street that people want to come see as well. So, I mean, is there anybody else got any further outside the box?
This is a fun discussion.
we need to see what we are talking about and discussing.
I would recommend starting with a business incentive. I think, but I like where you're going. I like where your head's at. I just don't know. It might be too wide of as far as creating some framework for business incentive.
I would like to talk about those kind of things maybe when we talk about the West Grand Avenue master plan, because then it would all tie into streets, because that would be something that we certainly couldn't afford to do here. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a really some cool idea, and I would like it. It sounds like we kind of have this $220,000 spent or more than spent between the chamber, possibly a communications person, business incentives. Was there something else? Oh, possibly a marketing firm or.
I think there's the chamber contract. There's the communications firm, so RFP, and then there's the grant program.
Yeah.
So I think between that, I think we are very close or
over. Yeah, I think that provides a great framework for staff to be able to drill down on each of those, working with the chamber on the assistance agreement and working with some RFPs regarding communication and marketing on a general level, weaving in branding as part of that work, and then fleshing out a business grant program and making sure we have opportunity for incentives as part of that program. Each of those three, I think, is rich with possibilities, and we could and will bring those back to the council to really drill down on what those mean and put those in motion here very shortly.
One thing I would love to know more about, because I know in February we'll be speaking again just about our budget and hopefully having some additional funds, would be if other cities have done programs to incentivize restaurants or a food scene or food trucks and how you do that, how maybe you bring that food culture about, because I would even love to see food culture more tied into Stone Soup because food and world food and world music, they go together. And so, and food trucks. We don't have any food trucks at Stone Soup. They tend to be more booths. So I don't know.
Right. Yeah, the steering committee has gone all out for the 30th anniversary, and food trucks are part of that, and also a soup contest.
Oh, fun.
So I think some of the reasons why the food trucks haven't come before is because for them just, it has to be worth their while to stay for the full 2 days because once they're in, it's not easy to get in and out. Mm-hmm. And so we've been able to figure out a workaround for that. Right. And you'll hear a lot more about the soup contest, but I just thought I'd throw that out there. So we're thinking the same
and
way.
I think that just having that research of how do you incentivize restaurants to come and food trucks to come, because they do have their certain amounts of money they need to make, and I think maybe they do better in groups, and is it we put up picnic tables in an empty lot in Grand so that there's like a place for them to focus, or what do we do to encourage that, and how much does it cost?
Yeah, I think we also need to remember that if we do bring in those outside food trucks, there we have our own restaurants in town that we want to encourage them to participate as well.
Right, and that's part of the research, I think, because I've always heard actually the more restaurants and the more food opportunities, the better for everybody. Mm-hmm. Because people just say, oh, I'm going to go here and I'm going to walk around, and then they pick. Mm-hmm. So that would be something to know, too. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because we don't want to. I don't know as much, except that I just like to eat. So, but like to know if we'd be going the right direction.
Okay. I think we've had a lot of discussion. I think we've given kind of three meaty directions to go in, which I think is probably enough for the moment, unless there's anything else that someone wants to add. I mean, we've got a very business-friendly approach, we've got a very community-friendly approach, and we've got a very cohesive outreach approach, so which I think will be a good jumping-off point for our next discussion.
Great.
Anything else on this topic? And anything that you need to clarify?
The direction is clear. I want to commend the council for your thoughtfulness on this topic. This is an open, interactive conversation, but one that was really important about one of the key elements of a successful, viable community. And I appreciate the council's deliberation, and we will put this into motion and bring this back to you at a later date.
Very good. Thank you. And I also do want to say thank you to both Mike and to Jocelyn, and also to Debbie and Krista for being here and participating. So, Debbie, thank you for coming forward and sharing your thoughts, because I know you don't come forward very often, so we very much appreciate those. And so with that, we will go ahead and close that item and move on to item number 9, which is the Monterey Bay Community Choice Energy MOU. So I will go ahead and turn this over to City Manager Bronson for a discussion, but do want to just, I'm sure he'll share this with us as well, but we do have a slightly updated MOU that's was sent out, and there's copies on the table over there if anyone has or anybody in the audience wants to see what changes or proposed minor modifications there are. So, Mr. Bronson.
Yes, just very briefly, what's before the council is a memorandum of understanding that has been drafted by the three city managers of Rio Grande, Grover Beach, and Pismo Beach pertaining to the Monterey Bay Community Power Shared Policy Board seat. So backtracking from there, as you know, we are embarking on membership in MBCP, as I'll call it. Even though service doesn't begin until 2021, our membership begins in about a month when the board of MBCP will officially recognize the 10 new member agencies that have joined the organization, the Community Choice Energy Joint Powers Authority, and welcome them into their organization. We'll be involved for a year prior to the service beginning in 2021. The three South County cities that have joined, Rio Grande, Grover Beach, and Pismo Beach, will share a seat given our population size. So the three cities will be together, much like Paso Robles, San Luis Obispo, and Morro Bay are also sharing a seat. The three city managers have deliberated and are recommending to our respective councils that we have a two-year rotation amongst the three South County cities to build in continuity and enough lead time for each of the cities to provide a role in those two-year period. And furthermore, we're recommending that Grover Beach be given the opportunity to have the first representative in this new organization, which will span both the year prior to implementation and the first year of implementation. So it creates a unique opportunity for us to be at the table for this multi-agency JPA that meets in Monterey on a quarterly basis. So we're recommending this to our councils, and we are the first agency to consider this. We do have a timeline of needing to adopt this prior to November 15th, as the MBCP board agenda packet is in production at that point, and they need to have that in place for the December 4th board meeting. So the MOU that's before you is for your consideration and approval this evening. It's been drafted largely similar to the MOU between SLO and Morro Bay, just customized for our purpose here. The changes that Mayor Lee mentioned early on were some fine-tuning edits that one of our neighboring cities suggested, which makes sense to help better specify some of the terms and provisions, and I do recommend that the council include those with your action this evening. So item one is to approve the MOU, and item two is to designate the representative from the City Council who will serve in this capacity for this two-year time period. I'll note that the alternate to the Council's representative will be from the City of Pismo Beach. We felt that it was prudent for us to have the alternate city coming from the next city up in the rotation to have continuity and to underscore the regional nature of the shared seat. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions the Council may have and any comments that you have.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation. Any questions, Mayor Pro Tem Shaw?
No questions.
Okay. Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
You have questions?
And don't question.
Oh, gotcha.
Councilmember Lance? No questions.
Very good. So I just have one very quick question, and that is the changes to this MOU. Do those need to be run by Monterey Bay? Or have they been and have already been acknowledged? Or does that is this really impact them?
They have not been run by Monterey Bay, but in my mind, they're non-substantive. They just provide some clarity around some terms here and there that really is between the three cities. This is our MOU as three cities sharing a seat, and I think once our council takes action and Pismo Beach and Rio Grande do so later on, then this will be put in place.
Gotcha. Okay, very good. And then another question that just came into my brain, and so if you can answer it tonight, this would not be a council committee per se, so do we need to do any reorganization of our council committees through this action, or would this be an ad hoc committee that would be handled separately?
So I'll let City Attorney weigh in as well, but I believe this would be a council appointment to an outside agency, much like there's a representative on the Fire Authority, Joint Powers Authority, and the Sanitation District, for example. So the council would have to actually formally appoint the individual after your direction on who that individual would be this evening.
Okay, so that doesn't need to happen this evening. We could appoint someone tonight and then take the formal action when we do our council reorganization in, it's either late December or early January.
Correct.
Correct.
And I agree with everything you said.
Okay, thank you. Very good. Okay, did that spur any questions? Okay, very good. Then I will go ahead and open this up to the public, see if there's any members of the public that want to speak on this item. Seeing no one come forward, we'll come back for discussion and action.
I nominate Mayor Lee to be our representative.
Let's hold that thought.
I will make a proposition generally that it may be best for someone that has a term long enough to cover the 2 years, at least guaranteed, as my official term would end in a year. So I'm just saying it would just make sense for consistency.
And I love all that discussion.
Yeah.
Let's have the potential approval of the MOU first.
Oh, before I think we're just make sure so excited about this.
Yeah.
Before
we're ready
before
to appoint someone.
Enter into appointment. Let's see if there's someone who wants to make a motion on the MOU.
My agenda has died, so...
Do we not make the motion together? Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll take them separately for the okay. purposes of this. We'll do the MOU first, and then we'll do the appointment.
Okay. I move that we approve a memorandum of understanding regarding the shared board seat between the City of Grover Beach, City of Arroyo Grande, City of Pismo Beach on the Monterey Bay Community Power Joint Powers Authority Policy Board, and selective representative. Oops. Ending with on the policy board that we.
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second, and that is the revised one that's on the dais, right?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Any discussion on that? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Lance.
Yes.
Councilmember Bright is absent. Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Yes.
And Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. Okay, so now we have a MOU in place. So let's decide who's going to be part of the city representative, who's going to be the city representation on
I nominate
this.
Mayor Lee.
Okay, we have a motion.
I agree with Desi's. We have a bit of a conundrum here because we have three people basically on a two-year schedule instead of four-year.
I didn't even think of you, Mayor Lee.
So at this point, from that perspective, the two that would be available would be either you.
Don't even try it.
That's exactly right.
So perhaps a question for the.
Don't try it.
So hang on a sec before we go there. So in the event, city manager, that one of us that has a term that does not extend past the 2020 timeframe, what would the what would the city's ability to backfill that position with another representative be?
The council would have that ability. The MOU that you just adopted has Grover Beach in the first two-year rotation. So in the event that your representative did not serve beyond 2020, then the council would simply reappoint or appoint another individual to serve in the second year.
And with that thought in mind, though, because it is part of the council committee assignments and the reorganization, we actually could change representation
between
the first and second
That's
year.
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay, so there is that as well.
Right.
So.
Well, and it's only for a year. Then it goes to PISMO.
Nope.
Two years.
I see.
And that's where I think Councilmember Lance was going.
Yeah.
So did you want to continue that conversation or that thought?
I mean, I'm open to, obviously, there's been other committee changes that you've reorganized based on circumstances, so I get that may happen anyways, just by nature of things. I just thought that it's something to consider, given that it is a two-year, and the fact that they're doing it for 2 years is for consistency purposes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think it's fine, aside from the fact that, having nothing to do with the fact that the meetings are all the way in Monterey, but I think it just makes sense for it to be the mayor. And if we do have a new mayor, it would probably make sense for that mayor to be in that role. So I don't know. I'm willing to take the risk.
Since we don't have to make a set decision right now, we do.
I believe from...
Yes.
From in order to have representation at the December 4th meeting.
Yes. MBCP needs a name so that they can begin planning, and then council can formalize that through the appointment process that takes place in January. But MBCP is looking for a name now.
Then I agree that the mayor should be the first representative from Grover Beach. So
do we need a motion, or is consensus enough?
The latter.
Okay, so do we have consensus on that?
Yes.
Do we have verbal consensus on the rest
of
it?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Nodding head.
Very good. So, okay, so I will go ahead and be the representative for the city on that, unless in December we decide to do something different. But until that point, I'm happy to serve and look forward to participating in that. So any other action on that item, Mr. Bronson?
No, sir.
Very good. So then that does take us to back to, that's a weird.
Public communication.
Yes. So my screen decided it wanted to split itself in half. So bear with me as I get to the bottom. We now have our second opportunity for public communications where any member of the public may address the council. Is there any member of the public that wants to address the council under this series of public communications? Actually, under public communications at the moment, we have a second public communications. So, okay. So, but now we have council committee reports. Mayor Pro Tem Shaw, any council committee reports?
No, I did not have any committee meetings since our last meeting.
And I'll say that I did not have any committee meetings either, so we'll go to Councilmember Nichols.
The Fire Authority met and had a short meeting, not too much business going on. I'm happy to announce that our brush truck made a trip down to Southern California and ended up in the Bay Area, and it is back home safely with its crew. South County Chamber of Commerce, I was out of town for that, and South County Transit, same thing. So that meeting was canceled again because everybody that's on the board was down in Long Beach.
Very good. Councilmember Lance.
I have no committee reports.
Very good. Thank you very much for those. Now, before we leave the committee reports, the December 4th meeting, if I'm going to be in Monterey, that is a SLOCOG Council Governments and the RTA meeting. So as my alternate.
I will actually be at the League Executive Committee retreat in Napa. Sorry.
Okay. So we need to figure out with SLOCOG how we provide representation at that meeting. So we'll ask at our meeting on Wednesday for that. Okay. Very good. So that does take us to council communications. Does anybody have any council communications this evening?
None for me.
None for me.
Then I will go ahead and share one that Councilmember Bright asked me to announce, and hopefully my phone will be large enough for me to actually see this. She wanted to announce Project Sweet Dreams during council communications. It's it's an event that she's participated in every year it's been announced at our council. And so this year, she wanted me to share that they're a local nonprofit that reaches out to children in crisis, whether it be parental issues, homelessness, or other crisis. And so it's to provide a little bit of comfort with a bundle of joy, which consists of a homemade blanket, a pillow, and or a new stuffed animal. So their volunteers provide the blanket and the pillow, and they are seeking people to provide new stuffed animals to complete that bundle of joy. So what they're doing is they're holding an annual Cuddle Up Tea event, which will be held Saturday, November 23rd from noon to 4 p.m. at the Hacienda del Pismo Mobile Home Park at 201 Five Cities Drive, just behind the Pismo Outlet Mall. So it's a great opportunity to service the Lucia Mar Unified School District Families in Transit Program, or excuse me, Families in Transition Program, CASA, which is Court Appointed Special Advocates, and then the Stand Strong community members as well. So all anybody needs to do to participate is to bring a new stuffed animal to the Project Sweet Dreams event on Saturday, November 23rd, from noon to 4 p.m. And they also do have a Facebook page if you just search Project Sweet Dreams, if anybody would like to
from 10 to what?
10 to 4. Excuse me, from noon to 4.
Noon to 4.
Saturday, November 23rd, from noon to 4 p.m.
Okay.
Very good. So she was... wants to encourage participation there, and that sounds like a great opportunity to cuddle some new stuffed toys and give them to somebody in need. So with that, any council communications?
I just wanted to say that there is a Boys and Girls Club open house this Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. at 1830 19th Street, Oceano, at the Oceano Community Center. And I think it's just for people to learn more about what Boys and Girls Club does and to just, there'll be some appetizers and just to appreciate the community.
And when's that again?
It's this Sunday, the 10th, from 1 to 3 p.m. At the Oceano Community Center, 1830 19th Street in Oceano.
Very good. Thank you. So that'll take us, unless there's other council communications, that'll take us to our city manager's report and comments.
Thank you. Just very briefly, three quick items. One is to highlight that so far we have received 75 applications for the short-term rental permits, and we've issued 46 permits thus far. And this is just in roughly 1 month of time from opening up the process. We're really pleased at how it's turned out. We've gotten very good feedback from applicants about the ease of the process. So overall, things are working really well, and we have a number of other permits that are coming forward soon. So again, kudos to the council for your clear direction, and kudos to our staff for implementing this very effectively. Secondly, last meeting, y'all talked about the GB60 festivities coming forward. Just to highlight again that Sunday, December 8th from 2 to 5 is our big event at the community center. A lot of good things are planned, including a potential reenactment of a 1959 City Council discussion that should be a lot of fun to help bring out that 60-year mark for our council. And also, we've installed the selfie-taking signs over at Grand Avenue, Highway 1, GB60, hashtag GB60. We encourage safe selfie-taking over there to help bring that forward as a public art piece. Speaking of public art, yeah, I'm pleased to say that we've received 20 submissions for our utility box art application process. We received almost all of them in the last few days, so we had a great influx coming in just before the deadline. Now our public art group will be taking the first stab at reviewing them, looking at some criteria to recommending designs that fit our community interests and provide some diversity of different design ideas, and then bring those to the council at a later date. So the committee terrific has its work to do for it. Cut out for it with 20 different designs to go through. And also, lastly, as was mentioned earlier, we have another great example of a business mural that was installed at 141 North 6th Street. It is almost done, I think 99% done, thanks to Ms. Jeffries and a team of community volunteers. They've taken a wall that was tagged with graffiti and made it into a beautiful exhibit of public art for the public space. So we're really pleased at how this turned out. Again, a great example of public-private partnership and a business owner coming together, working with the community to beautify our community. So credit to Ms. Jeffries and the volunteers to make this art come alive.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that update. And Ms. Jeffries, did you want to say anything about either the public art group and the utility boxes, or the mural? Very good. Not a problem. So I did want to ask the city manager just one other question, because in addition to the December 8th community outreach for the Grover Beach 60th anniversary, we do have the parade coming the day before, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure if we're at the stage yet where we want to publicly announce our grand marshal, who's gonna participate in the event this year. So, is there something that you wanted to share, City
I
Manager?
Would be delighted to. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, to your point, we are pleased to offer our wonderful South County Holiday Parade on Saturday, December 7th. It's a fantastic family-friendly event. This year's theme is the Diamond Jubilee, tying into our 60th anniversary. Following the parade, we'll have a snow playground. We'll bring snow to Ramona Garden Park and have a great festivities. But the really exciting news is that our Grand Marshal for this year's parade is none other than D.W. Grover, our city's founder, which is very appropriate for this Diamond Jubilee 60th anniversary event. We're delighted to have Mr. Grover joining us for the parade. More details to come. I think it's a great opportunity to celebrate our founding with this amazing event.
Thank you for that, and I think everybody can agree it'll be a representation of D.W. Grover in personified form.
I was about to say, I'm a little confused.
It won't actually be D.W. Grover, but it'll be a representation of him. But
it might be worth doing a little outreach to the schools, because I think third grade is the year where they study D.W. Grover. I know my daughter talked about him in third grade, so the kids might be excited to see him.
I think that's a great outreach opportunity, and then also I know there's been outreach to car organizations and car clubs in an effort to get a number of 1950s and 60s era cars to be involved in the parade, along with a number of other community organizations. So thank you for that unveiling. So we're looking forward to see how that works and having D.W. Grover participate in that. So any other city manager reports?
No, sir.
Very good. Thank you. Then we'll go to city attorney's reports and comments. Very good. So seeing none there, and we're seeing no closed session. So unless there's any other items that people want to...
As council communications, I cleared this with our city manager that it would not be a serial meeting for me to suggest that since the 60th is our diamond, that I think all the city council ought to wear tiaras and crowns during the parade. So can we have a consensus on
you
that?
You first, Barbara. I'll have to get mine out.
I don't know if I've ever worn a tiara.
I will have to reserve judgment on wearing a Twitter or tiara, but I will definitely be supportive.
You could wear the crown.
Okay.
We will work on our outfits and decorations and the decorated truck that will be taken to council for the parade between now and then.
Okay. All right.
Which I think the city manager has confirmed with me that we are able to use one of our city vehicles, which I believe we used not last year but the year before, as our float.
Yeah, that was kind of fun.
Which was very, very fun, and it was a good way to show off the city vehicle. So. Notwithstanding the tiara question, we are adjourned.